Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender. There's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We are the ones who will never be broken.
Hello, folks, and thank you for coming to Bard's Logic, Political Talk, part of the Growing Conservative Conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. And you can hear the founder, Mark Prasik, on the show in our archives that we interviewed last week to tell about the Patriot Journalist Network. So visit that. But tonight we have on the founder of the Patriots Bunker. And, of course, callers and chat participation are welcome. And join me, the host, and our panelists when they come here, our guests tonight, which is Gordon Taylor, and, of course, other audience members. And, of course, enjoy our roundtable discussion where you're welcome to join because all mics stay open. Now, Bard's Logic welcomes, as I said, the founder of the Patriots Bunker, Gordon Taylor. You can see a link here on Blog Talk Radio to the PatriotsBunker.com. Now, Gordon is a retired medical device manufacturer from Becton Dickinson in 2003 as a print manager. He got involved as a writer for RedState.com, which I'm sure a number of you, many of you are familiar, in his early days, and was a retired featured front page contributor. Published the Hindsight Report with co-publisher Dave Hines. He gained public recognition and was often linked via the Drudge Report and other conservative news outlets. He also had some good group of reporters and covered the Republican convention in South Carolina prior to the 2008 election cycle. Gordon and his group were able to get their reporters credentialed. Well, that's something I definitely wanted to ask you about tonight, see what that process involved. To attend the major events, including many of the pre-election debates in 2008. Merged the Hindsight Report with the Minority Report blog, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with as well, when his partner passed away in an unfortunate automobile accident. But Gordon has been, has been retired for a while, but he says you can only do much fishing. He built the Patriots Bunker and intends to make it a major source of conservative news, as he did with his previous venture. Right now, it's a simple conservative new agitator with a definite lean towards the right. And that's a quote from him. And it says, eventually they'll begin to publish original material as he once again builds a team of reporters. In addition, they're going to have a live conference room called The Bunker, where they would do live shows, mainly based on prepping, survival, and, of course, politics. And tonight, later on, we'll also have on the host of the American Refugee Radio, put him on. And, of course, Bard's Logic is the grassroots We the People show. And so at this point, I will like to bring on our special guest tonight, founder of the Patriot Bunkers, Gordon. How are you?
Hi, Robert. Thanks for having me on. I'm great.
Thanks for coming on.
It's a little snowy up here in upstate New York, but
yeah, I hate to tell you, but we're supposed to get here in Ohio 50-degree weather for the next 2 days. That's how it is here.
We got about 2 feet of snow on the ground here. They're saying the same thing, 50s and rain over the weekend, so it's good to be.
Wow. Yeah, it's good to be on the jet stream, isn't it?
Yeah.
You don't really quite know what you're going to get.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you having me on this evening, and, you know, basically what you said is what I was going to talk about. With the Patriots Bunker, We just put something up right now. It's a news aggregator, like you said. A few people have referred to it as the Drudge Report, only better because we have links to a lot of other conservative outlets on there as well, you know, World Net Daily, The Blaze, Fox News, and we have some live headlines, and Michelle Malkin's blog, and, you know, different links. We're going to be, in fact, I was just talking to someone yesterday, we're going to be bringing on another editor pretty soon, probably right after the holidays. We're going to start firing up some original material, and it's kind of like what we did, what Dave Hines and I did back in the day with the Hindsight Report. We started it up in 2006 prior to the 2008 elections, and were able to build enough notoriety so that we could, you know, get our reporters' credentials and get them into major pre-presidential events. And we plan to do the same thing here in 2016.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely looking forward to it. We'll have to keep in touch on that. And it's also great to see people still doing things, even though the with the Christmas season, and a lot of folks are concentrating on the holiday, I understand, but there are still important things out there that need to be addressed and kept in folks' minds. And we'll start off with some of the questions I got here. I touched briefly on your history and background and your accomplishments. Could you give us some more details on some of those?
Well, yeah, I spent a career as an engineer and worked my way up the management ladder until I was working for a company called Becton Dickinson, which is a major medical device manufacturer. They have 80 locations in 40 different countries. And in 2003, they decided to close the plant I was managing and wanted me to take over a group of plants in Puerto Rico, and I said, nah. I didn't want to go to Puerto Rico and live there. I don't know if you've ever been to Puerto Rico, but you get about two blocks off the strip, and it's chickens running around in the streets, and you know, it's real, it's real deliverance kind of country down there, so to speak. And because I had been down there to the plants a few times, we had three plants down there, and I said my wife would never go for this. so I retired. In 2003, and got involved with writing at Red State, and that actually got me really intrigued in working with politics, and was the seed, so to speak, planted in my brain to start the Hindsight Report. Dave Hines, my my partner, had a degree in journalism, and we co-published the Hindsight Report together. Unfortunately, Dave was killed in an automobile accident in Michigan on some black ice the day after Thanksgiving. And, you know, I just kind of lost heart. And so we moved, we merged it over with the Minority Report blog with our good friend Steve. And, you know, I kind of been laying low since, doing things behind the scenes, supporting local politicians and whatever. And then I got involved with Mark over at PJ Net and Patriots Journalist Network. And I don't know, kind of got my my political blood boiling again, especially what's been going on with Mr. Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started out the Patriots Bunker with the idea of creating a, you know, a clone of the Hindsight Report, but more decidedly right-leaning than I was even before, you know, being, honestly, I'm just fed up with the GOP. Back then, I was pretty strongly
yeah, there are a lot of conservatives. There's still some good ones out there, but...
Yeah, there are, yeah. And, you know, I mean, I just had a lot of hope for things back in 08, and when we ended up nominating...
coordinating McCain.
McCain, and then I'm like, oh, man, this is, you know, it just took the heart out of me. And so I kind of just backed off for a while. Like I said in my brief to you, you can only just do so much fishing. And I came out of retirement again to start seeing if I can make a difference, you know?
Great, definitely, and that's one of the things I really tout is about making a difference. And I'd like to touch more on redstate.com, but also we can do that later in the show. We got definitely have plenty of time. And you mentioned earlier about Obama and the hopes. So is that what kind of spurred the ideas of starting the Patriots Bunker?
Yeah, it actually did. I just got so fed up with what's going on with this guy and, the whole Obamacare fiasco and, the country's going in the wrong direction. And one man can make a difference, as Thomas Jefferson said. I think that if we all just do whatever we can do within the purview of our abilities, I think we can make a difference. There's strong talk now from Larry Klayman, the attorney that sued and got the decision the other day about the NSA, that he's now going to go after Obama and go after impeaching Obama, that the impeachment of Nixon was on far less grounds than what Obama's done here, and it's going to be fun to see where this goes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there's already a lot of talk, of course, about 2016 on both sides, of course, mainly mm-hmm. with the Democrats are talking about, Hillary Clinton, and I pretty much think if she does run, she'll be the one to grab it, but we'll see. There's just so many on the Republican Party. I hate to hear things about, Rubio and Christie, but I'm sure they are folks like them will be in the mix.
Christie was strongly mentioned even back in 08, but we all see what he turned out to really be. So.
Oh, certainly, and he still may. He was talked about maybe he was the face. I heard the other day they're talking about Paul Ryan, but of course most of the folks that I hear talking about those two are actually people on the liberal side. So if a liberal is saying how strong, a Republican candidate, would be in an election, those are the folks that you probably do not want to vote for in a primary. But back to the website, what type of things, information will people see on the site, and what resources do you make available? And you mentioned the articles, yeah.
You cut out on me, Robert. I didn't hear completely.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is this better?
Yeah, I think it was my phone, but go ahead.
It was the snow, yeah. And you mentioned the different links to different news outlets, and I believe I've also seen some articles. What other resources do you make available to folks, or what resources in the future you'll have?
Oh, well, I just put a bunch of stuff together. We have some business link on there. Have a link, weather link, sports. The weather link will actually bring up your local weather, not mine.
No, that's cool.
Things like that. And I even have a little bit of liberal stuff on there. Liberal leaning. I have ABC News, RSS feed on there right now. Just so people can read both sides of the story and just make their own decisions,
Mm-hmm.
I got Breitbart on there and an RSS feed from Michelle Malkin's blog. It's just those RSS feeds will eventually start being filled with being replaced with stories that we generate on our own. And but I wanted to just have a place where people can come and read the conservative news in one place. I don't know if any of the listeners have been to the website yet, but the patriotsbunker.com. But we have a news reader where a panel slides in from the right and takes you to the website that you click on, the Drudge Report or the Blaze or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a close tab, and you can close it without ever leaving the site and go to your next resource instead of having to click down a whole list of bookmarks. And this is a lot of the sites I read on a daily basis to begin with. A few of some other people suggested that I add. We're open to suggestions all the time on what content we provide there.
And there is a link here on the description here on the show's homepage here on Blog Talk Radio, where folks can access access patriotsbunkers.com. And you noticed, and you know, we do see there's not only links to conservative news outlets, but a few mainstream and liberal ones as well. And you kind of already answered that, is, you know, to give, you know, both sides for people can make up their mind. I think that's a very good idea. And also says that Patriots Bunker, as well as Bard's Logic Political Talk, is a member of the Patriot Journalist Network. And so how did this come about? You became a, and you touched on it some earlier, how this came about, we got linked up with the Patriot Journalist, and why did you join?
Well, I began to become active on Twitter and got, I started seeing, actually, I think probably those Benghazi tweet fest that Mark has every Tuesday and Friday night for the Justice for Benghazi 4 caught my attention when I saw him a lot, and I just clicked through and liked what I saw. Mark's got a tremendous amount of tools there people can use for Twitter, and frankly got just fed up with Facebook. You know, I really like the idea of promoting the cause through Twitter, and it's a real grassroots effort, you know, and that's
mm-hmm.
what and that's what even, you know, our other website was, and this one's going to be. None of my reporters, unfortunately, I didn't make enough money where I could pay them, but I was able to pay their expenses and get them into venues that a lot of them were bloggers, you know, and writers over at Red State and various things. We didn't have the pull that that Red State does now. But we had just as much pull back then, because Red State was kind of new back then as well. It was the old Red State on the old format that they had, and I got to know Eric Harrison and quite a few of the other founders and members, and you know, they eventually made the big time and got bought out by Eagle Publishing, and and Eric said, I got his own radio talk show now in Atlanta, and the whole bit, you know. Red State is now owned by Eagle Publishing, which is also owns, I think, National Review.
Oh, wow, that's fascinating. That's interesting to know. You're at the ground floor of that.
Yeah.
Well, since we're on, tell me some of your experiences with them.
Well, you know, I just started blogging over there like a lot of other people did. And, you know, they liked the writing that I was doing. And so they started pushing a lot of my articles to the front page. And it's a bit of a different format now. It's not quite as friendly to just the casual blogger as it was back then. But because they've attracted a lot of really, really good writers now and good you know, good sources. I mean, Michelle Malkin writes there frequently, and, you know, it just became much bigger than it was originally. But Red State was a great training ground for me in putting together the Hindsight Report and learning how to get reporters and into events and stuff like that, you know. So it was a great experience, and I still have an account there. I've got one of the oldest accounts there at Red State now.
I bet. You know, being one of the founders of that, like you have it on the ground floor.
Yeah.
Well, but with the Patriot, I mean, sorry, with the Patriots Bunker. Well, let's lost my place here. So, where do you see the site moving forward? You know, you've linked.
Well, like
to
I said, we're
going to
start producing our own material, and then we have a. We're going to call it the bunker. It's a video conference room where we can hold live presentations, do live
mm-hmm.
shows. We're going to bring guests in, survival guests and preppers and whatever. It's different than a chat room in that it there is a chat function to it, a component I should say. And you can have up to 5 people on live video for a panel discussion at one time. But you can also do presentations with PowerPoint and
oh, that's cool.
Play videos and you know, a bunch of different things. It's quite a multifunctional venue, and it should become quite an attraction and bring a lot of people in. Right now,
yeah,
you know,
very interactive.
We're kind of slow right now. We're just starting. You know, we're getting a couple hundred visitors a day. Nothing to write home about. And then we struggled the same way with the hindsight report in the beginning. We just kept plugging away, and then finally, the first big hit we got was when we did a piece on George W. Bush when they had the big tornado that hit that town in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And he went down there, and he was walking through the rubble with the class president and the class officers, and they stood in what was left of the basketball floor and held hands in a circle and prayed. And that got picked up by PrayForThePresident.com, which is a Christian site that is nonpartisan, and they simply, it's run by a preacher, and it simply just pray for, you know, the president and whoever the president is, and for guidance and direction. Because of that link, we shot up to about 150,000 hits an hour.
Wow.
And it just took off from there. Once we got that notoriety there, then sites like the Drudge Report and whatever would pick up stories now and then, you know. So, and that's when we
Cool. Yeah, definitely looking forward to seeing more of that.
I don't expect miracles right away. It's going to take us a year or better to get things off the ground well.
I definitely know it takes time. I've been doing this, I've been doing the show here for a year, a little over a year. It's August of 2012. I was on the American Refugee Tonight very briefly. I would like to have gotten on there earlier, but my daughter had some math homework. They kind of caused me to get on late. And we'll talk with him later tonight, so I'm looking forward to talking to him more. And you too, we'll see if they have any questions for you as well. And we also, I do see that we have James on the line, and he's the founder of the Overpasses for Obama's Impeachment, which is also the Overpasses for America now, and we'll be bringing him on shortly as well. I just got a few more questions I want to go over.
Heard James last week when you had Mark on. He's a good guy.
Oh, great. Yeah, he's on here, you know, pretty often, almost on every show, you know, one of the panels we got here, and, you know, promote what he's doing out there. He's got some great things, you know, over on Facebook. He has a lot of pages where he networks. And we'll talk more about that when we bring him on with the Overpasses for America. But we'll finish through these questions here, and I do have, you know, so we have plenty of time. And a conversation that you and I had off the air, and I wouldn't want to touch this, is you mentioned the Madonna effect. Can you elaborate on that and tell us about its significance?
Absolutely. I wrote a piece on this back in the 08 election, and you know, back then it was still wide open. I mean, at Red State there was the Giuliani fans and the McCainiacs and the, you know, Fred Thompson's crew, and everybody was, you know, screaming and yelling about who was the best and whatever. And some years ago when I was traveling with BD, I had to go to a seminar in California, and I happened to be in the bar one night waiting for my little table beeper to go off to get a table to eat, and I was sitting next to this guy, and got talking with him, and he was an executive for a large businessman in California, and he told me an incredible story, and I related it to exactly how what you have to do to elect a president. And contrary to what most people might think, Madonna was not one of these people who traveled around the country in a van, sleeping in her car, you know, working Holiday Inns and county fairs and whatever, trying to get discovered. Madonna was created. Madonna was created by four businessmen who had, a couple of them had put some money into a few concert appearances out on the West Coast for some groups that were known to not show up. Sly and the Family Stone, Sly and the Family Stone being one of them. So a lot of the concert promoters would require large bonds to be placed, so because these guys just had a reputation of being no-shows sometimes, you know. And so they wanted these bonds in place, and so these guys had to go out and find people with the money to put up the bond just in case they got too high on drugs and didn't show up.
Oh,
and
wow.
So they began to like being around that whole scene with all the groupies and the women and the whole bit, you know. So these guys having too much money and didn't know what to do with it all. But we're smart.
Yeah, those two, few of the people we know, right?
Yeah, right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, like you and I, Robert.
They
decided to create a rock star. And so they hired the best people that they could hire in different venues like choreography and whatever. And they went out and they found Madonna. Now,
wow.
There's been some talk in the past about Madonna being doing porn and stuff like that before she was discovered. And so she was, look at the people out of copying Madonna now.
Right.
Lady Gaga, Miley Cyrus, it's all. She was the first to shock audiences with skimpy outfits writing songs or whatever, but she was not an artist. She was not a singer. In fact, her voice isn't that good at all. But these guys put together a carefully planned business plan, found the person that they knew they could promote, they knew could be a star, and could be coached and could be taught and have music written for them and perform it the way that they knew it needed to be performed to make them successful. And electing a president isn't any different. It doesn't matter if you're a Fred Thompson or a Rudy Giuliani or a Mitt Romney or a Ted Cruz or whatever. If you don't learn how to play to the audience and how to do what you need to do to get elected, you'll never become president. And so that's what I call it, the Madonna effect. You have to, regardless of what your feelings are, how strongly, how passionate you are about Ted Cruz or Mike Lee or any of these guys, you have to really dig down deep inside you and ask yourself, are they electable? And that's why a lot of people, that's why a lot of people that want to become president never end up being president, because they're just not electable. They can't perform the way that they should to get the reaction from the audience. And that's what got Obama elected.
Yeah, I remember back in the primaries when even some of the so-called conservative media, even Fox News, I would even say, I'm a little jaded on Fox News because of the way they handle the primaries, but they kept pushing, touting like that, especially with Bill O'Reilly, that, I'm having a brain freeze on the nominee, that, he was the only one that was electable, and, that's
right.
He was the worst candidate. And, Romney, there we go. Romney was actually the worst candidate to go up against Obama. And they were touting that he was the best. He's the best candidate to go against Obama, when actually he was the worst.
Absolutely.
And he was not electable at all, I didn't think.
Yeah.
Especially in the times.
Yeah, right. Well, a lot of people wanted to see Sarah Palin run. And when, back then I had everybody in red state on my neck. I was like, I love Sarah Palin, but she'll never make a good president. But she had that electability factor. She had that Madonna factor. She was pleasant to look at. She was gregarious. She was outspoken, outlandish, whatever you want to. And she may have been more electable than McCain,
Oh, I don't think that she was.
Yeah. When they ended up nominating McCain, I just stopped writing.
Wow.
I called up Eric and I said, I'm done, I just I can't go on like this. This is ridiculous, you know. So, but that's what, you know, that's what the Madonna effect is. It's, you've got to find someone that can perform on cue. And, you know, Obama is very charismatic, and why he can't speak without a cue card, you know, without a teleprompter. Because he was made. He was made by the Democratic machine. You know, he had all the right ingredients. He was a minority. He was, and these, again, are my opinions, you know. But, you know, he was likable. He had that character about him. He could just persuade people to believe anything he said. And that's what it takes to get somebody elected, unfortunately.
You know, I used to make kind of jokes about that. It was a little cartoon I thought up during the election where, you know, you had debates where you had Obama on one side where he had a teleprompter in front of him for the debate, and you had Romney on the other with Newt Gingrich telling him what to say and then behind him. For a long time, Newt Gingrich was the face of the Republican Party during the primary. I mean, he was the one talking about conservative values and conservatism, how the nation would benefit from it. And because, in my opinion, you know, Romney, he couldn't do it. I mean, because that wasn't at Romney's core with you know, that conservatism.
I love Ted Cruz. I think Ted Cruz would be a great president. But to be honest with you, I don't think he's electable. You know, he just doesn't have that what it takes, you know, to be a president. I honestly don't know who the GOP is going to put up there right now.
Well,
it's too early
to
tell.
I'm hoping Newt Gingrich can come back and run again, and perhaps, because I think no matter who they get, and I think they're going to probably get Hillary Clinton, and I think no matter who they would get up there, I think
Gingrich
blow them away at the debates.
Yeah, and again, you know, it doesn't really matter if it's Hillary Clinton, or now I see noise about the Jerry Brown, talking about running Jerry Brown, whoever the Democrats bring forth and whoever the GOP brings forth, it's going to be who does the best job of selling a candidate, you know.
Yeah,
unfortunately, it's what it is. You know, it's just.
The Democrats are, and they're starting now. I mean, they're always working on it. You know, and one of the things I hear that is a flaw of conservatives is that, you know, they wait till, and not just, you know, the politicians, but in some ways a lot of the activists as well. Not all of us. I mean, we're talking about, you know, working towards 2014, 2016 now, but some wait to the actual. Or not some, but a lot seem to wait till the actual election time, and by then it's too late. And I think that's for the next question here. Then we'll open up the mic.
Well, one of the things that we got to learn how to do, and Mark Prasik and I have talked about this a lot. He's in contact with a lot of politicians and their press secretaries and whatever. He speaks to a lot of people. These people are so technology illiterate, and I mean, when I mean technology, I mean, you know, social media, whatever, where the Democrats are so far ahead of them on that. I mean, Mark talks to some guys every day, and they haven't got the slightest idea. They want them to do a Twitter bomb and don't realize that, you know, it takes 30 hours for just to propagate one, you know. They're still old school. Oh, yeah, I can sit down in front of a radio mic, or I can go to makeup and get on a TV show in 20 minutes and talk, you know, and that's what they're ready to do. They just have not embraced the new media, and I think, in this, especially in the 2016 election, it's going to make a big difference.
Horton in 2012, it really helped out Obama in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it did. Absolutely, but because the Democrats have been so far ahead organizing, you know, organizing via social media, the Republicans just seem to ignore, and to this day, they still don't really know how to use it. Mark was telling me there's only a handful of these representatives or congressmen or senators that even do their own tweets.
Right. Yeah, a lot of them just have a staff, somebody on the staff doing it.
Or they don't have anybody. they totally ignore Twitter, you know?
Yeah, a lot of them do.
I know Steve Stockman, who is running, is going to run against Cornyn in Texas because he stabbed Cruz in the back. He's a congressman now. He wants to run for Cornyn's Senate seat. He's one of a handful, that dude that does write his own tweets and does his own tweeting. We were trying to see if we could get them together to get them on hooked up with PJNet, but I got through to gatekeepers and spoke to one of the under press secretaries or somebody. Mm-hmm. And right now, and it's understandable, he's just not speaking to anybody outside of his constituency right now. So you know,
right.
You know, he's concentrating on his local mm-hmm. local efforts. But I wanted to see if we could get him on because he understands Twitter and he knows what Twitter can do for him, you know.
Right.
But then again, how many Patriot journalists, network members do we have that are from Texas, you know? So I know how he's looking at it. But, you know, but it's just the GOP's got to come into the 21st century here, you know. They're still back in the 19th, I think. Sending messages by horseback, pigeon.
And with that in mind, what would you suggest for those in the audience to get involved and to make a difference?
Well, you know, it depends on everyone's individual desires and individual talents, but a very easy thing to do right now would be to go over to patriotjournalist.com and sign up. It's free. You can sign up with a Twitter or Facebook account. It's much better if you have a Twitter account. And get involved with the Tweet Fests. We're running them on Monday nights and Tuesday nights and Friday nights now. Hopefully we're going to be doing more of that stuff. Their one voice gets amplified by all the other members. Right now, Patriot Journalist Network, I believe, is just going over, reaching over 7 million timelines, Twitter
mm-hmm.
timelines. So, and that's what that is the number of members and their followers all added together. So we have
right.
over 2,000 members and over 7 million followers of those 2,000 members. So every time, let's say I tweet, one of the tweets that Mark Preet does up at the Red Meat chat room that he has for the Tweet Fest. Then every other member that comes in that night for the 2 hours that the Tweet Fest goes on retweets everyone else's tweets. So it multiplies the effect tremendously. So one person can really make a difference. He can have 100 followers, 50 followers, whatever, and do the tweet. And then, you know, a couple of hundred more members come along and retweet his tweet, and it goes out to all of their followers. So suddenly that one member's tweet is reaching thousands and thousands of people. And that can really make a difference. That's one easy thing that people can do. Get involved in blogging if you want. It's very simple to set up blogs. Get involved in local politics. It's the easiest place to start is in local politics. You know, somebody running for dog catcher or town supervisor or whatever. You know, go to a few meetings.
School board.
And just, you know, get in the grassroots level and get your feet wet and see if it's what's for you. And vote.
Yeah. But if you're going to vote, be an informed voter. That's very important. But, of course, if folks are listening to shows such as this and goes to websites such as yours and some of the other folks we'll hear from tonight, I think they'll be well on the way of getting informed. But at this time, I will be opening up some mics, and I'll open up two here at first and see if they'd like to make any comments. First, of course, I'll bring in our panelist here, and that is James Naber, founder of the Overpasses for Obama's Impeachment and Overpasses for America. Thank you very much, James, for calling to the show. How are you?
Oh, doing fine. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, doing pretty good. Trying to recover from some math homework now. My daughter's. Well, I'm just remembering what they just sent her home with the sheet without any kind of instructions or anything, and I haven't taken that kind of math for years, and I'm like, oh man. So it took me longer to figure it out than I liked. So, but still, I guess still trying to get up from that. We also, James, I'm going to keep your mic open, of course, but we also have, so I don't know how much time he'll be able to stay with us because he just came off of a show of himself, and that is from the American Refugee. This is the host of the American Refugee folks that you can also hear on Blog Talk Radio as well. Thank you very much. How are you?
I'm doing good. How you doing, man?
Good, good. Thank you very much for calling to the show. We've got a round table here. For those who are only been here for the first time, what I usually like to do is through the discussion is just, as I said, round table, just kind of bring people in, you know, and have them comment. So first we'll go with you, James. And then, you know, I'm trying to, the American Refugee, I'm trying to catch the first thing there again. What was that?
You can call me. Well, first of all, let me tell you this because I don't hide. My real name is Roger Dockham. And by the way, I'm at 4402 Eastern Street, New Orleans, Louisiana, because I don't hide from anybody. But I do like to go by refugee.
You like to go by refugee? Okay.
I like to go by refugee. All right.
Okay.
I like to go to New Orleans.
You know, I've never been there. I've always wanted to go to Mardi Gras, but maybe one day.
There you go.
You know, I lived 5 hours from New Orleans for 5 years, and never once, for whatever reason, had the money when Mardi Gras was going on to get down there. That was just kind of disappointing. Seemed like it would roll around, and I'm going, where did all of my money go? I don't even have gas to get there.
Well, I was stationed in Alexandria, Louisiana, in the Air Force, and I was fortunate enough to make it down there. Mm-hmm. But I got so drunk, I don't remember anything.
Well, I thought that's kind of part of what Mardi Gras was for.
It's funny. Different parts of town have a different personality during Mardi Gras. There's some parts where it's real family oriented. There's some parts where it's nothing but drunken debauchery.
Yeah, and real quick, I want to move back to something you said, refugee, about with Paul Ryan. You said, blew off his core beliefs and decided, and I think this would be a part of conversation if people want to pursue it, blew off his core beliefs and decided he wanted to be part of the machine. And we have someone here who signed in the chat. Thank you very much, Roll Tide, for doing so. And you add, Roll Tide, true but easy for us to call him out, but when you're in his shoes, it's a tough choice. And then he continues, either he could go along and try and make a difference where he could, or he would go rogue and be ignored by the media. And if you'd like to call in Roll Tide or anyone else who is on the line, or wants you to be on the line, call in at 347-945-7428. Again, that's 347-945-7428. And I see those who are on the switchboard, if you want to chime in as well. Just push the 1 on your number dial. But if you're content with just listening in, we are happy with that as well. But since I was kind of addressed to, somebody in the line got disconnected, if you'd like, you could call back in. I'm mostly going to automatically open up folks' mics. But what you can do is just push the 1 on your number dial, and that will let me know that you want to chime in. But if I don't see that little question mark and that you didn't hit the 1 to chime in, I know you just want to listen to the show. You're on the phone. Refugee, if you want to, since you made the comment.
Let me comment on Ryan and what the guy said about Ryan. Also,
sure.
Mark's in there if you want to bring Data Genesis on into the conversation. He's in the chat room as well right now. But, you know.
I've seen him in the chat. I don't see him on the line phone-wise, but I do see him on the chat.
Okay. So he's just logged into the chat. He didn't log in. He didn't call in. Well, anyway, he might call in. You should call in, Mark. Become a part of the discussion. Here's the deal. I myself have been greatly affected by both Ayn Rand and St. Thomas Aquinas. I consider myself to be halfway between those two. And Paul Ryan at one time was like, wow, this is somebody that I really agree with. This is somebody whose philosophy I can really get into. And he blew that off to move up within the ranks of the Republican Party. And Roll Tide, I think the mistake that he makes is this isn't the old days. This isn't the time where you could say, well, let's just go along to get along and then maybe I can get to be president one day. No, in my view, this is pretty much post-constitutional America, and the crap has hit the fan. and we're not in a situation where we can think in terms of, yeah, some goals need to be long-term goals, but we're not in a situation where we can think in terms of slowly rising up and maybe we can live with having a moderate president or this, that, and the other. No, we've got tyranny staring us down, and the fact of the matter is if we don't stand up to it and go all out, it's going to be too late.
James,
well,
I would have to agree. Go ahead, James.
I was going to say I would have to agree with that completely. The time for this moderate, slow play nonsense is over. The fact of the matter is that this country is going to have to take a hard turn to the right, back to the Constitution, because we've veered so far left over the last few decades that, I mean, we're staring tyranny right in the face. And if we don't rip the Band-Aid off quick, it's going to be a long, slow, painful death for this country.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. This is Gordon. I agree totally,
Gordon,
James. And Refugee, I agree with you as well. That's what I was saying about the Madonna effect. We've been doing this for years now. We've been getting people into the presidency that are electable, not necessarily qualified to be president, but people that either party can decide that, hey, you know what, whoever the handlers are, whoever the promoters are, say, we can get this guy elected, you know, and that's what's happened.
See, what I think in terms of things that we have to do quickly, there are certain things that the country becomes addicted to, okay? Look, heroin's bad for you. Heroin kills you. But if you go give somebody heroin every day, they actually need heroin, okay, and they have to be weaned off of it. And I think that there's a lot of things we're going to have to wean Americans off of. And if there's any more of it that comes in, it's just going to be too late. Look what we're looking at now. We're looking at a government that is basically totally walking all over the rights of Christians. If you believe what a Christian believes, that's now considered to be hate speech, and you're not allowed to speak about it, okay? A&E is flat out, considering that Phil Robertson was basically an employee of A&E, they're flat out discriminating against his religious beliefs. He didn't say anything hateful. He didn't say anything that was out of line with mainstream Christian thought. We live in an age where they're coming after our guns, where they're telling us we have to buy a product from a private company that we don't want or need through Obamacare. There's no more time to waste, guys.
The mistake he made was the fact that he admitted he was a Christian, period.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, look at where we've come from. George Washington, the first president of the United States, routinely, as president, gave Christmas sermons at his church.
Right.
Mm-hmm. When the first synagogue was formed in Providence, Rhode Island, he wrote a glowing letter welcoming the Jews to America. And welcome and telling that, you know, openly that you know, they're welcome to practice their religion here,
mm-hmm.
Because the Constitution says we have freedom of religion, and we've turned it around and made it into freedom from religion.
Yeah, absolutely. Unless that religion is Islam.
Well,
exactly.
Whatever happened to the, you know, whatever happened, you know, my wife and I ask this all the time. Tim Tebow, I mean, he had 1 year. I mean, yes, I mean, he was always, you know, praying and things of that nature. I don't have any problem with that. But it was his rookie year. He took Denver to the playoffs, and I pretty much haven't heard anything about him. What I think is relevant is I wonder if, because he was so, you know, I don't know what word to put, but, I mean, he put it out there. He put his Christianity out that actually hurt him and for other football teams to pick him up. Does anyone think that that may be the case?
He's another Doug Smith. He had a good year, and that was it. He's done.
I think he is done. I think that he's actually a guy who peaked early, and some of his physical abilities are actually deteriorating. But flat out, they were a lot harder on his Christianity. I mean, he comes out as a Christian, and it's treated as a bad thing. Who's this guy that had previously been voted the worst player in – I don't even know his name, but he had previously literally been voted the worst player in the NBA. He comes out as a homosexual, and Obama starts praising him as a hero.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'd like to see somebody come out once that, you know, everybody presumed was homosexual and have them come out as straight. What a shocker that would be.
Let's see what your action. Real quick, gentlemen, I just want to bring Roll Tide back in on the chat with Paul Ryan. He says, as a citizen, I agree with you, but as a politician, he played his hand to his interest. Think about how long he can be eligible as a Republican presidential candidate. So well, thank you very much, Roll Tide. I just wanted to bring that in.
Yeah. Well, it's the fact of the matter is that it's going to reach a point where there may not be presidential elections in this country. People think that's far-fetched, but they need to remember that while we are one of the youngest countries on the face of the earth, we're one of the oldest systems of government on the face of the earth, okay? We've already lived a lot longer than most systems of government do. And it was by no means considered to be a popular thought that the Soviet Union was just going to collapse overnight when it did. And the fact of the matter is, Obama will use a crisis, if there's a crisis, to delay an election. He may create a crisis to come after our guns or something else. He is looking for the opportunity to do something like that. And I just don't feel we can continue to deteriorate. And democracy is not going to mean much anyway. And, of course, we're not really a democracy. We're a republic that uses democratic means. But if you go and you legalize a bunch of illegal aliens, and if you start bringing more, you know, it used to be that we brought people into this country. Their race didn't matter. Where they came from didn't matter. But you know what they didn't have to do? They had to be able to support themselves. Okay. Now we bring people into this country as immigrants who immediately go on government assistance because the Democratic Party is growing their voters that way.
No, real quick, Ray. Yeah, I don't know if it's just on my end, but it sounds like you're breaking up a little bit. I don't know if you're in a bad spot there on your phone. Is anyone else experiencing that?
Yeah, I was doing that on my end too.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that, guys.
Okay, that's okay. We're always fixing that. We'll bring it back to you, James. And I want to bring Gordon back into the conversation with us because I know before I brought in Roll Tide, you were wanting to bring up something. So let's go ahead and we'll go back to you, and then we'll bring in Gordon. And then hopefully by then we'll have we'll have his mic or his line there on refugees and better. Go ahead, James.
Well, I'd like to hit on two topics real quick. One thing Gordon had said is the Republicans, you know, they're back in the 19th century, and they really sadly are, and that's kind of something that you know, with overpasses we're trying to do is reverse that trend because, you know, we're really kind of a mix of the 21st century and any century prior to social media because we use social media, you know, to get the word out to those that use it. But then we go out and actually, you know, hit the streets and get out there in the public and where people that don't use it can see it. And I think that the Republicans are really going to have to hybridize themselves until they get accustomed to the idea that they have to use social media. It's an absolute must. It's not an option. And it's not something that's going to disappear. It may change companies, and it may change appearances. You know, there may be something, you know, new like Twitter that shows up at sometime in the next few years or several years. There may eventually be something that replaces Facebook, you know, just like they did MySpace and whatnot mm-hmm. like that. But the fact is social media, by whatever company name, is not going anywhere. And
you're absolutely right, James. You're absolutely right.
You know, and the sooner that they realize that, the sooner that they'll become more relevant. And not to toot my own horn here, but I think that's kind of the magic that we generate with overpasses, the fact that we really mix the old school way of getting out there and actually physically protesting where people can see us out on an overpass or a busy intersection, but then organize everything and spread the word on social media. And that'll bring more people into the 20th century that are on the conservative side of things.
let me just say real quick, I just wanted to come in and say that I just agree with you 100%. When you marry the two, it works. I go out in the streets of New Orleans in a superhero outfit. I call myself the American refugee, and I hand out constitutions. And I get in arguments with liberals in the French Quarter. But I'm also very active with the Patriot Journalist Network and on Twitter and using the social media. And when you marry the two together of old-school boots on the ground with the social media, it's magic.
That's exactly what I'm getting at. And that's what we're doing. I mean, we're very active on Twitter, and I recently did just hook up with PJ Net. I actually have to call him back tomorrow. I missed a chance to call him today and get things coordinated there. He's got a very, interesting setup there on PatriotJournalist.com that, I haven't seen anywhere else like that. And, it's a very powerful tool, and that's a kudos to him for the idea. But the other thing I wanted to touch on is Paul Ryan. I really think looking at the way he, over the last year and a half to 2 years, is morphing himself into this lamestream, moderate, pro amnesty, budget compromising type of person. If I were going to make a prediction here in the end of 2013 as to who the RNC's, their guy, it's going to be Paul Ryan. He was the VP candidate, with Mitt Romney. And looking at how he's started to adopt the rhino positions on everything, I really think that is who we are going to see as the chosen one by the RNC.
The establishment pick. What do you think, Gordon?
And he's got that young factor, and so they're going to have, and that will help. Undoubtedly, that will help because, they'll be able to play him as the new guy versus the old school, whether he is, has fallen into the old school trap or not.
Hey, Gordon, what do you think on that?
I agree. I think, unfortunately, he wouldn't be my choice, but he's beginning to position himself as the most electable, just like Rudy Giuliani. He tried to do the same thing back in 08. Fred Thompson was a staunch conservative, probably Rudy was one of the most moderate Republicans running at the time, and he tried to shift. He's from New York City. And I live in New York. We've had Republican governors and Republican mayors in New York City. I don't live in New York City. I live up in the Catskill Mountains, but I don't even go to New York City. He had to reposition himself, and it was just too little, too late. But I think Ryan is beginning to try to Madonna-size himself. he's trying to become the electable one, and he sees the criticism that that the ultra conservatives like Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and a few of the others are the flack they're getting now, and then the flat out attack on the Tea Party now by the GOP mainstream. And I think he's trying to position himself away from that.
I think we make a mistake, though, Gordon, I think you're absolutely right about electability when it comes to certain factors. But I think we make a mistake when we put moderation, when we think that moderate means electable, because it doesn't. You run a Democrat light against a Democrat reel any time, and the Democrat reel is going to win it. And somebody can be charismatic and electable and not angry and still extremely conservative. It's entirely possible. You know, one of the amazing things about this last election that I wouldn't have believed it if you told me this was going to happen, and I'm not wrong that much on politics, but if you had told me that Mitt Romney was going to win the Republican vote by a higher margin than Obama won the Democrat vote, and you had told me that Mitt Romney was going to win the independent vote, because he did, and you had told me that Barack Obama was going to get around the number of votes that that John McCain got 4 years earlier, I would have thought that Romney was going to win in a runaway election. Yet Romney lost solidly. Romney lost because a lot of conservatives didn't vote. Okay,
right.
There were a lot of conservatives who threw their hands up and said, "That's it. There's no difference. There's not enough of a difference between Romney and Obama. I don't believe that Romney is going to repeal Obamacare. And if we elect Romney, we'll just get a Democrat in 4 years. Let's just forget about it. Let's just live with Obama for 4 years and hope we can get another conservative in there in 4 years. And if they nominate a moderate in 4 years, I think that's going to happen again."
No, I agree. I mean, there hasn't been a moderate Republican to win the general election in 40 years, at least not one.
Not one that ran as a moderate. You know, George H.W. Bush was a pretty moderate Republican, and he was pretty much of a management guy. But, of course, he had been Ronald Reagan's vice president for 8 years.
Right, and that's what got him in.
Yeah,
well, yeah,
exactly.
That's what got it. Yeah, and then you have the compassionate conservative with his son. But one thing I want to touch on, and everyone answer this. This is just something I thought about for a while. Is it seems like one of the other things that Republicans have a problem with is his next turnism is what I call it. Seems like the guy who had who was in second place last time around. Let's kind of push him, you know, to be the establishment pick. And the one we, you know, push or try to make the most electable because he didn't quite make it the last time around. So let's make it happen this time.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. I mean, the fact that, you just look at how the Republican Party, you know, the RNC picks their people. It's almost as if they have a phobia of anyone with any flavor to them. You know, I think I used this term on one of the previous shows, Robert, where it's like they try to pick the unsweetened oatmeal candidate, you know, the plain Jane,
right.
No scandal, you know, nothing that polarizes anybody. And then of course Mitt Romney kind of had a double whammy against him. You know, and I live in Oklahoma and it's a largely a Baptist state, and I couldn't even tell you how many people that I talked to that said that they just weren't going to vote because they weren't, under any circumstances, going to vote for a Mormon. And
that's true. That was a factor. That was a factor.
You know, and Roll Tide, real quick, James, Roll Tide put this in the chat, and I this is one of the points I agree with. Is why Mitt Romney was one of the terrible, you know, was one of the worst picks, if not the worst pick. And I agree, Roll Tide. He says, Mitt was a terrible candidate. You don't run a billionaire during a recession. I think that's a valid point, you know, because people are like,
certainly
how can
you don't run somebody who apologizes for being a billionaire during a recession. Okay, Bill, if you ever listen to Bill Whittle had a great piece on how Romney should have handled that issue and didn't. And had Romney handled it that way, it would have been an entirely different matter. But Mitt almost ran like he was embarrassed about being a millionaire, and then of course he made the unfortunate 47% comment, you know, that got recorded, and that actually hurt him.
Maybe senile touch.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think if Mitt had instead touted the fact that he was a millionaire instead of ran from it, I mean, let's face it, our government is a financial nightmare, and we need somebody that knows how, probably Mitt Romney's best qualification, and I don't know if he would have used it or not, was exactly what he did at, what was that company? Was it Bain?
Yeah.
Bain Capital.
Yeah. Yeah, at Bain Capital, where, you know, they bought up companies and they cut them up and they sold them off. Well, that's exactly what we need to do with the federal government. We need to cut this department here and cut that department here, and if it's something necessary, we'll sell it off to a private company and let them manage it that way. And his ability to do that was probably his only redeeming quality that I could see as him as a candidate. And instead of embracing that, he ran from it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he also made it, and then I want to bring Gordon in for comments, is, you know, he tried to put it more towards he wasn't chopping things up and selling them off. He was trying to make it as if he actually built something. And he was saying, oh, well, I built businesses, got jobs. And then they had all this, you know, information out there that kind of saying, no, it's more like what you just said, James. You're chopping companies up. You know, you're selling them off, things of that nature. Now, I agree that's what we need to do with the federal government. But first of all, he
didn't build anything. The government built it for him, according to Obama.
Right, you know. And according to Barbara Walters, they thought that Obama was the Messiah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, remember his acceptance speech, I guess. He had, like, these pillars, like a Roman god or something like that. But I do want to bring Gordon in. Into the conversation, so we'll give you the mic, Gordon. What kind of comments you want to make on?
Well, one thing, you know, that kind of has me worried that I do a considerable amount of investing, and I subscribe to some quite a few financial newsletters, and two very big financial advisors in this country, Dr. Martin Weiss and Porter Stansberry out of Baltimore. Way back in 2011, started ringing bells and screaming and yelling that there's going to be a financial collapse in this country sometime between then and 2017. And there's some conspiracists out there that claim that, I think a refugee alluded to this, about the something's going to get created, some situation's going to get created where Obama can run for a third term under an emergency thing like Roosevelt did during the Second World War. You know, you didn't want to change presidents during a war.
Right.
And that's why I kind of got into the whole Patriot thing and prepping, and that's why I'm going to be doing stuff on my shows on prepping. And I became a prepper myself. I'm not a survivalist.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got enough food here to survive for about 6 or 8 months. And, you know, I can produce my own electricity, and I went out and bought silver bullion in various sizes from tenth of an ounce up to as a reserve currency. I mean, just, you know, just based on what
Very
these
smart.
Guys were saying, you know. And what I'm afraid is we're going to get somebody elected in there, maybe a Republican, and then the crash is going to come, but it's not going to be caused by them. It's going to be caused by all this irresponsible spending and what's going on with Obama, and they're going to get the blame for it, and that's going to be the end of the GOP altogether. But I don't know. And these guys are still advising to, you know, be prepared, because something in the next couple of years, probably 15 or 16, they're saying, we could see
economic collapse. You can't keep printing money that isn't based on anything forever.
Well, exactly.
You know, it's just not going to work forever.
The Roman Empire was around for 800 years, but it's not here anymore.
Right.
And it's just like refugees said, you know, the type of government we have now is maybe not what we're going to go forward with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
It's definitely scary times, and I would encourage everybody to be prepped. I need to do more of it. But I learned a lot going through the experience in Katrina, because I never left New Orleans during Katrina or after.
Sure.
And I there were things I did right, and there were things I did wrong. There were ways I was prepared, and there were ways I wasn't prepared, and it was quite the lesson.
Well, even non-political figures, non-financial figures, like Robert Kiyosaki. Everybody knows Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote an essay not too long ago called The 5 G's. And he says everyone needs to have these, because something's coming And, I mean, he's a mega millionaire now, self-made, owns gold mines in South America and, you know, whatever, condos in China and in Hong Kong, and just a vast empire, manufacturing empire, whatever. And he says something's coming. And, you know, you don't have to be a financial, you don't have to be a CPA to realize you can't keep, you know, buying red ink pens because all you're ever doing is writing in red. Mm-hmm. Throw the black ones out. You don't need them. And the 5Gs were gold, guns to protect what you have, grub, food. You know, they're saying at least 6 months. If the government crashes, you're going to need at least be able to survive on your own for about 6 months. Gas, meaning, you know, some form of way to produce electricity or whatever it is you need, you know, run your car, whatever, and ground. Mm-hmm. People in the city living in the big apartment blocks are going to be SOL because you're going to need to plant your own food and grow it, you know. And therefore, that's why you see advertisements for heirloom seed vaults and stuff, you know. And as part of my prep, I bought a bunch of heirloom seeds. Mm-hmm. Heirloom mm-hmm. seeds meaning they're not hybridized. The fruit they produce can be reused to grow the same plant, you know, corn or tomato or whatever. And this guy is not a financial advisor. He's not a politician. He's not a conspiratorialist. He's just a regular businessman. And mm-hmm. he sees it, you know. So there's got to be something to it. And that fact seems to get ignored a lot. And look what's going on in the Middle East. I mean, Iran's going to have a bomb now,
mm-hmm.
you know, because Obama's ignored him.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much, you know. Won't back Israel. You know, everybody says Israel's probably going to go it on their own, but I don't know if they will. I think they're a little bit afraid to go it on their own, you know? I don't know.
Why do you think that's a whole
other night, but...
okay.
Right.
We can definitely have a discussion on that. Go ahead.
But anyway, Robert, I want to thank you for having me on, but I have got to duck out of here. I appreciate you having me on, and I appreciate the discussion. And I think we're all on the right track. Unfortunately, we're some of the most informed people in the country. Well, the majority of the country hasn't got a clue to what we're talking about, and that's the problem.
Well, that's absolutely true. Well, Gordon,
I enjoyed talking to you.
We need to network more. There's some things we need to do together. I think there's some ways that my website and yours could cooperate with each other, and there's probably some things you could teach me and some things I could teach you. You know a lot more about putting together a website than I do, and there's ways we can work together.
You betcha.
All righty.
Yeah, definitely. And once again, that's patriotsbunker.com.
Thank you very much, Robert, and for the opportunity to get me on here tonight, and you know, I'm going to be a regular listener. I started listening last week because you had Mark on, and I'll be there every night that you're on.
Well, great. I appreciate it. Thank you very much, and we look forward here on Bard's Logic from hearing from you again.
Okay. Good night, guys.
Good night. Take care. Well, folks, as I said, that was the Patriot Bunker's founder, Gordon Taylor, and which is going to be one of the conservative news sources that you can reach. And you heard about all of what he provides, provides on the site. And again, check that out at www.patriotsbunker.com. And so we still have you, Refugee, here on the line, and also James. I'd like to bring over the mic to you, James. But before that, I want to tell the folks, if you'd like to listen in or chime in, you can do so at calling 347-945-7428. Again, that's 347-945-7428. So I'm going to hand the mic over to you, so to speak. James, go ahead.
Well, you know, just kind of touching back on things, you know, we really are headed for a mess. You cannot print $85 billion a month when it's based on thin air. And you cannot borrow money and pay it back with interest and give it to someone else and put the bill for them. I mean, you know, honestly, you know, we should, you know, we shouldn't be giving a dime away to anybody, you know, but if we were, it should only be to our most staunch allies. I mean, you know, only to them, and only because the investment in keeping them stable would be worth the interest that we're going to pay on that debt. The fact that we're sending, you know, we sent, you know, billions of dollars of weapons and cash to a government that was essentially the Muslim Brotherhood, who is none too friendly to the United States, is just absolutely ridiculous. You know, we've got to get our priorities right as a nation again and understand that America comes first in America. You know, the Chinese, obviously, in China comes first. And you know, this nonsense that we've taken on as being, you know, well, you know, we were the world's police force for a good long while, and now it's like we've become the world's charity basket. And, you know, this redistribution of wealth that's going on around the world, thanks to the United States and the Obama administration, is quite simply national suicide. We've got the energy resources in this country to not import a single drop of foreign oil if we were to utilize them, but yet
that's absolutely true.
Yeah, I mean, what did they say? With I was reading a report a few months ago that said with the reserves they know of, you know, thanks to the fracking technology available now, and of course that's only, you know, energy technology is only going to get better. We have enough oil reserves in the United States to last 600 years, not 6 years or six centuries at current consumption levels. And, of course, technology where, you know, cars are slowly but surely getting better gas mileage and whatnot like that. And the fact that we're actually selling our own oil overseas is just ridiculous. And you know, this nation has got to figure out, you know, that we have got to put ourselves first. And that doesn't mean bringing in a bunch of foreign nationals and you know, waving a magic wand and making them Americans. You know, we have a process for that. Does it need to be revamped so it's quicker? Well, it is the 21st century. So
Absolutely. You know, when you fly on an airplane and the stewardess stands there, and I guess I'm being politically incorrect by calling the stewardess now. It's a flight attendant. When the flight attendant stands there and gives you the instructions about what to do in the event of a crash or the event that you lose cabin pressure, one of the things that they say is if you lose cabin pressure, the very first thing that you do, even before you try to help your child, is put your own oxygen mask on. Okay, because if you can't get any oxygen, you can't help anybody else. Okay, so you put your own oxygen mask on first. That's the very first thing that you do, and then you look to see if anybody else needs your help. Okay, and we have to have that same attitude, and it's just absolutely true. The idea of borrowing money to give away in foreign aid is absolutely insane.
You know, I would have to say that, you know, if we got a truly conservative candidate that was running as a dark horse in the primaries running for office come, you know, obviously we know it's going to start, you know, early 2015. I would have to say they'd have to have a two-word motto, and that would just be simply America first. And I think if they were to do that and stick to it and point out how
the liberals would love that.
Instead, I'm afraid we're you know, unless something comes about, because even the RNC has said that they will not back Rand Paul. Well, just that in and of itself tells me that I kind of like that guy for president. If the RNC won't support him, he must, and because he went to a meeting with the RNC, along with a bunch of other, you know, higher up people in that. And, you know, within weeks, they came out, the Republican National Committee came out and told, you know, said, told the American people that they would not back him for a presidential bid. Well, I don't know exactly what Rand said in that meeting, but I wish I could have heard it, because I'm thinking that he made them very, very angry and probably just told them how it really is. In, you know, in the real world, this is what we have to do for America. And
there's a very good chance I may end up supporting Rand Paul. And I got to tell you, you know, there's different people that are right for different times, okay? And there are times when you could get away with having a president that was just a good manager, okay, and that that's what he was, and that he was going to come in and he was going to do a good job of managing the government. Now is not that kind of time. There are also times during the Cold War, and also perhaps when there hadn't been the kind of assault on our liberties as there were now, where I could see maybe moving a little bit more towards the side of security instead of the side of liberty in certain types of decisions. Now's not that time. We've been going security in favor of liberty for too long, and now it's about liberty. It's about liberty. It's about America first, and it's about, is it in the Constitution? Oh, it's not, then we don't need to be doing it.
Well, exactly. I think I think what Congress needs to do when the next president comes in is do a comprehensive oversight on our entire judicial code. And if it is not a strictly constitutional law, NDAA, Patriot Act, and so on, and you know, if it's not a strict, if you can't look at it with a glance and say, that fits within the Constitution, it needs to go. Maybe you need to pass a new law that can fit the same role that it did, but it is strictly constitutional. But the fact is that those laws are not. And Obamacare is not. The fact that they can come in and examine your house without even having a warrant, I mean, hello, Fourth Amendment. And the fact that if a doctor says, you know, looks at your medical records and, oh, look, well, 20 years ago you were depressed, well, you can't own any guns.
Well, one of the things that's going on now, okay, look, the fact of the matter is, yeah, they come up with this nonsense about mental health. Look, mental health is a broad term, and somebody can have very minor problems with their mental health in the same way as somebody can have very minor problems with their physical health, and they can have a cold. Okay, there are people that have struggles with a little anxiety or a little depression or this or that or the other, but they try to put this mental health exemption, and what they're going to do is they're going to take any patriot who served in the military that has a PTSD diagnosis, they're going to take anybody that suffers from depression at any point in their life, anybody that suffers from anxiety at any part of their life, and say that they can't own a gun. I interviewed a woman on my radio show who's a great patriot who served overseas, okay, and who is completely disabled and has both physical problems because of something that happened in her service as well as PTSD. And she has a very hard time getting out of the house. Now, they used to come to her house to give her medical care. They recently stopped doing that because they informed her that it's not safe for them to come to her house because she owns a weapon and because she has a mental health diagnosis. So they require her to get to the VA, even though she has a very hard time moving. They require her to get to the VA for her treatments that she has to get a couple of times a week where she can't be armed. I've talked to other people who are veterans who aren't getting the mental health care that they need because they're afraid of losing their gun rights.
Well, and they should be. I mean, I can promise you right now that unless I've got some urge to walk into a mall with an AK-47, which I don't ever see happening, you know, I don't ever see happening. I work in a prison. I certainly don't want to end up in one. I will never tell a doctor anything regarding my mental issue, you know, if I happen to have one. How are you feeling today? Man, I'm great, Doc. Man, just life is good, you know. regardless of what it is, and unless I get to the point to where, you know, I'm feeling dangerous to other people because I'm not going to have them tag me with that, and that's because that is what they're trying to do. I mean, the fact of the matter is our veterans are being abused on a daily and a bureaucratic, you know, on a daily basis, on a bureaucratic level, and they should be the most revered people in this country. I mean, you know, the fact is you can go to Congress and serve two terms and get a lifetime pension, and you know, free health care for the rest of your life, which you're exempt from Obamacare, and we're all footing the bill for. You know, it's like, you know, my own father was a veteran and served in Vietnam War, and we were at the commissary recently. And of course, they're talking about taking those away.
Right.
And I was just looking around at all the veterans, you know, and I'm not. I tried to be in boot camp, stomped a mud hole in me. I got hurt, got sick, and they said, we're costing us too much money.
There you go.
You know, but that was just one of those things in life, and I certainly don't hold the U.S. Army responsible for that. That was just my body rejecting, you know.
Your body rejected the military. Yep.
That's it. That's right. It. You know, but I looked around at all the veterans in there, you know, of all ages, and you know, the thought that came, you know, to my mind, you know, that. You know, and it had been there before and just popped up, and I'd never actually told it to him, is that if anybody ought to get a full lifetime pension in this nation for the, you know, for a short-term career, would be anybody that did combat duty.
Yeah, there'd
be more folks joining the military, too, if that's, you know, it's a volunteer military. There'd be a lot more folks volunteering as well. But real quick, just want to let the folks know that we are about a half an hour left of the live portion here on Bard's Logic Political Talk, and I just got done chatting with a great friend of ours and another panelist who comes on as well, and that's Kelly Mordecai, who is the author of A Hidden Fourth Branch. He's kind of our grand jury expert as well, and also has a website of the same name. He'll be calling in later on this evening, so stay tuned for that. Just got done chatting with him. He's going to try to make an audio again tonight before we go into extended version. As you know, James, we do many times here on Bard's Logic, and that's, of course, after the live time, which is still recorded and is also available on the archive when the show is over. But since we are still in live time, let's finish up the discussion with you guys going to, and then I'd like to give you, Refugee, the opportunity to talk about your show, you know, when folks can hear it, you know, its origins and what do you cover on there as well. So let's proceed that way. Go ahead. I believe it was with James and then you, Refugee, and you can talk about your show there, American Refugee.
Well, I'd like to just real quick and just let everybody know where we're at with overpasses.
Do you have a website, too? What's your website?
Overpasses.org.
Overpasses.org, okay.
And we actually did. I just filed recently and received confirmation back from the state of Oklahoma that we were accepted as a 527, which is a political action committee. Now, you know, a lot of people may ask, why didn't you go with a 501c3? You know, well, and the fact is, a 501c3 basically signs away your First Amendment rights, and you can't go out and protest for or against any political candidate. And with that said, that is one of our primary goals and missions this year is to, you know, for the 2014 campaign is to vet candidates and then go out and rally for candidates running against liberal and rhino incumbents that are up for re-election. The fact is if you look at the where we're at in this nation right now, the 2014 elections may very well be the most important elections in the history of this nation. We've got to get out and vote, and we've got to get out and vote in record numbers because you know we're looking at a Soviet style socialism, and, you know, right in the face. A lot of people scoff at that. Oh, it'll never happen here, but. You can pretty much guarantee that back when the Soviet Union came into existence, the people that were living there never saw it coming.
Right.
and you know, we've got to wake people up, and that, you know, and that's our goal. That's really, that's our primary function, is to wake people up. And you know, and anybody that believes in that, believes that, you know, we need to, you know, get the, basically, you know, to coin a term from the 80s, we need to rock the vote.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, join us, get us out there with us. You know, if you can't for whatever reason, because a lot of people do work, you know, share it with people. You know, we've already made a profound difference, and I'm, you know, I really, I hate to, you know, toot the horn of the overpasses too much, because I don't want people to think I'm arrogant or boasting or whatever. But the fact is, prior to overpasses getting out and hitting the streets and putting the word impeach Obama out there in front of the public on, you know, driving to work and driving home, there wasn't a politician, one, that would even say the word impeachment. And
no, they
wouldn't. Yeah, and since we've been out there, they're saying, well, if we had the votes in the Senate, well, now's our chance,
mm-hmm.
and it's 2014. And we've already got Democrats running for cover, you know, are starting to from Obamacare, and that's only going to get worse. I really honestly believe that many of these Democrats that towed the Obama party line will, you know, when given the opportunity to not be under the whip of Harry Reid, will turn on Obama, the ones that are still in office,
mm-hmm.
and when the facts of the crimes that Obama's committed in office are put out there for everybody to see by, you know, by the House, you know, under impeachment hearings and special committees, I believe that if the Republicans have a Senate majority leader, impeachment will happen. It'll take about a year after they start. And
mm-hmm.
that's one thing that people need to understand, is it's not one of those things where they just show up one day on a Monday, and then by Friday they're like, all right, he's out of office. It doesn't work that way. You know,
right.
it's a long game, and it's painful. And believe me, I wish the sergeant-at-arms in the Senate would just walk up and slap handcuffs on him, but what are the odds of that, right?
Right.
You know, and but that's really, that's what we're about to do, it, you know, is 2014, we aim to directly affect the 2014 elections in a positive manner, you know, for the United States, because, you know, we have to, somebody has to, and, you know, if it's like a phrase I like to use, you know, about anything, if you want to get something done, if it is to be, it's up to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people in America have to do. If you want this country to get better, you have to do something. You can't wait for Superman, because you're Superman, and you're waiting for you to show up.
Absolutely. Good stuff, man. Good stuff.
With that, I'll turn it over to you.
Well, fantastic. I'm happy to get a chance to talk to you for the first time, and look forward to checking out overpasses.org. I have seen your stuff in the media and in the press, and
mm-hmm.
you're absolutely right, and you guys have done a great job. My story is this. I was just stunned by the Obamacare decision in the Supreme Court, and I was stunned when Justice Roberts, in my opinion, succumbed to blackmail and wrote that ridiculous ruling that he did. I got active in the last political election. I was disappointed when Romney was the nominee. After a lot of prayer and thought, I held my nose and voted for Romney. I don't blame anybody who didn't. I don't blame anybody who voted third party or who didn't vote, because that was a tough call to make. Okay, it really, really was. But I held my nose and voted for Romney. And I sat at home and I looked at the results of the election, and I had no idea what I was going to do, but I knew that I couldn't support this corrupt government anymore. And without having any clue of what I was going to do, I walked into my office at work and I said, I quit. And they said, what do you mean you quit? I said, I quit. I can't pay federal income taxes anymore. I can no longer support this beast of a federal government. I'm going GALT. And they said, you're going what? I said, I'm going GALT. I don't know how I'm going to do it yet. I don't know what I'm doing, but I quit. I resign. That's it. Okay. Well, it was like the next day, and I'm feeling a little nervous about the fact that I just quit my job, and I was thinking maybe I'd go work little construction helper jobs, or that I'd, you know, cut grass, do various under the table things to make a living, and that maybe I'd call in, you know, radio talk shows and talk about my idea of going Galt and not paying taxes. And I was walking around the French Quarter in New Orleans. That's where I'm from. And, you know, the funny thing is I had already used the term American refugee a few times. I had, after reading Levin's Ameritopia book, I thought about how, you know, this isn't really America anymore. It's Ameritopia. And I had told people I feel like an American refugee, you know, in some foreign country. And when I was walking around the quarter and looking at the mimes and the clowns and the street performers, I said, you know what, I'm not just going to call myself the American refugee. I'm going to be the American refugee. I'm going to put on a superhero outfit, come down here, call myself the American refugee, declare liberty, and preach liberty. And then I got the idea of starting to hand out constitutions, and I started getting the pocket constitutions and handing out constitutions. It's hard to believe, but now, having just started the day after the last presidential election, and starting with the constitutions about a week after that, I've now given out over 15,000 constitutions on the streets of New Orleans. Do most of them get thrown away? Yes. Do most of them get thrown away or used as coasters or not read? Yes. But some of them get read. And some people stop and say, look at this fat idiot in a superhero outfit giving out constitutions. Man, that's not working. But then they think, at least he cares. He's doing something. He's putting boots on the ground. What can I do? And I started having experiences on the streets of the quarter. I decided to start tweeting about it. I started tweeting about it. It's a year later, I got 36,000 followers on Twitter. At one point after I was at around 5,000 or 10,000 followers, and people started telling me, you know, you ought to do a radio show, you ought to do a website. I said, I have no idea how to do that. Then one supporter who wanted to remain anonymous got in touch with me and talked to me about the idea of doing a radio show and doing a website. And he said, well, I tell you what, he said, I'm going to give you $2,000 to get started if you think you can get a website built for that and if you think you can kind of get yourself set up. And that's what happened. I call myself a mendicant monk for liberty. A mendicant is a beggar. You know what? I live if patriots give me money to live off of. That's how it works. And I go out there and I give out constitutions and I do the website, theamericanrefugees.com, and I do it full time. I made the call not to register with the federal government and not to become an official organization or a PAC. The way we do it now, we have an anonymous board of directors that remains hidden. I own no property any longer. The only property I own now officially are my dogs and my guns. I got guns and I got 7 dogs, and those are in my name. Nothing else is in my name. Okay. And, you know, one guy basically provides an apartment for below market rent that's now our offices, and they let me live here. And another guy does this and another guy does that. We just kind of put together the whole thing. And so that's what we do now. I got the radio show on 5 days a week on Blog Talk Radio. On Mondays and on Fridays, we're at 3 p.m. Eastern. And Mondays is Patriot Journalist Monday with Mark Prasek. And on Fridays, we call it Twitter Follow Friday. It's a little bit less political. We talk a lot about the lessons I've learned on Twitter and how to promote things on Twitter and how to grow on Twitter. Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, we come on at 8 o'clock Eastern time. And, you know, we're revolutionary, grassroots, political talk radio. Trying to do it 5 days a week, some shows are better than others. You know, I'd say that I probably have 2 or 3 really good shows a week, and I usually have a couple of stinkers a week because it's just hard to do a show 5 days a week. But I just dedicated myself to doing this full time, and that's how I do it.
Well, that's pretty impressive. Yeah, typing something real quick. So, James, if you'd like to go ahead, and then I'm going to chime in.
Let me say one more thing before James chimes in, though. Let me make something absolutely clear. I put on a superhero outfit, and I call myself a superhero. That's the shtick. Okay, I know I'm not a real hero. I know the guys in the dog tags are the real heroes. And in fact, let me tell you why I'm not a veteran. I'm not a veteran because I was too busy doing drugs and getting drunk and chasing women when I was a young man to care. And I'm ashamed of that. Okay, but the fact of the matter is I've been clean and sober for about 11 years now, and I'm trying to make up for what I didn't do as a young man. But I understand that the veterans and the people with the dog tags are the real heroes.
You know, it's funny that you say that about, you know, making up. I mean, I was as complacent as anybody out there for the longest time. I mean, I would read about politics, and that's as far as it would go. You know, I would, you know, I and for a long time I didn't. I mean, you know, for 5 years of my life, you know, I was a World of Warcraft addict. And,
okay.
And you want to talk about one of the least productive activities you could ever possibly do. I mean, it's a digital scavenger hunt that you don't even get anything. At least during rush week, if you belong to a fraternity or a sorority, at least when you run around on a scavenger hunt, you get something out of that. But you know, and that's really, it was kind of funny because that's what dawned on me one day is I'm playing a digital scavenger hunt that I get nothing for. And I never went back. I couldn't bring myself to log on. Mm-hmm. And the sooner people realize that, you know, a lot of these activities that you're doing seem like they're fun now, but when you get older, are you going to be able to look back and go, yeah, that was a good time spent with my life? And if you can't unequivocally say that was time well spent, it's probably a good idea to consider your priorities.
It is.
And you have to wonder, you know, George Washington, I mean, everybody knows who he is and what he did for all of us. And I imagine that even as great a man as he was, there was probably one thing that he did, you know, somewhere in his life that probably maybe nobody even knew about but George. And he just looked at it, and, you know, that was just an incredible waste of time. And why did I ever do that? Yeah, exactly. You know, I could have eaten those cherries, but instead I wanted to cut the tree down, you know.
and as the environmentalist that I am, I don't like that kind of cutting down trees, do I? No.
Well, hopefully.
No, I do consider myself a green conservative. Conservative environmentalists, people are like, does that exist? Yes, they do. Here's one right here. But real quick, Jen, before you continue on, I do want to welcome in the chat, because they signed on, it looks like a 1-2 Iggy Mom, and I also like to welcome Beer Hunter as well. I had to throw my eyes back on. so I had to recently start wearing glasses. I guess I'm getting farsighted. So it's something I'm still getting used to. But welcome, a 1-2 Iggy Mom and Beer Hunter, welcome to the show. I know they've seen you guys before. It's great to see you back, and especially I remember seeing both of you during the primaries, so it's great to see you again. Go ahead, James.
Oh, you know, it was just, you know, and that's really, you know, kind of back to where I was, you know, about priorities in life, you know. I mean, it probably struck me really when, you know, my mother passed away back 10 years ago, you know, this in fact, just a few days from now, it'll be the 10th anniversary of my mother passing away. When a friend of mine said something to me at the funeral, and at the time, at the moment he said it, it made me very upset. But then it didn't take but a few moments for it to sink in because of my reaction to him, and he kind of added to it a bit. And, you know, we're there at the funeral, and he said, well, now's when we get to find out if she was a good mom or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, of course, that's a shocker. That's kind of a slap in the face at your mother's funeral. And I just looked him right dead in the eye and said, what? You know? And he said, well, if she was a good mom, then we'll all be all right. And now, I call him a friend, but, you know, he was really closer to a brother. It was kind of this lost soul my mother took in as a, you know, he was a foster kid that had a very bad experience with being a foster child. He spent more time at our house than he did at theirs. And really, you know, he may not be related by, you know, by genetics, but you know, he's as close to me as a brother. And, you know, when that was said to me, you know, now's when we'll find out if she was a good mom or not, I set myself to, you know, well, to making her proud. It's like, well, you know, she was a good mother, and I have slacked off a big chunk of my life and haven't done anything productive with it. And it's a shame that it took an event like that to wake me up
And at that point, you know, that is, you know, where I turned my life around from basically being, you know, a useless consumer to trying to do something with myself. And, you know, there were some bumps along the road, but I'd like to, really, you know, anybody that's listening to this, I'd like to save them that kind of shock factor. You know, mm-hmm. look at what you're doing, and is it something that you're going to be proud of later on in life? And if you can't say yes to that, well, stop doing it. Find something better. It may take you a while, but do it. And that's where that's kind of where overpasses came from. Is I have always looked for something I could do to make a difference beyond myself, you know, for the bigger picture of things. And then, you know, I started posting on a Facebook page, you know, basically blogging on there about, you know, news and, you know, politics. And it wasn't enough. And then, you know, saw that article about a protest out in Carlsbad, California that was on an overpass. And that was the inspiration, you know, for where the whole movement came from. And, mm-hmm. you know, for the first time in my life, I can look at what I'm doing. And I'm proud of what I'm doing, you know, because, if nothing else ever came out of overpasses, and I certainly hope it does, and I hope to make a profound difference in America for, you know, for the better. But if nothing else ever came out of it, other than the friendships that have formed because of it, then I have done all those people that service, and I'm proud to say that. And I'm, you know, and so, you know, to everybody listening, you know, make a difference, not just in your own life, but in others. Make a positive, do something positive every day, you know, if you can.
Absolutely, and love what you do. You see,
Refugees, real quick, I just want to bring someone on who it's great to hear her back onto the show. And so at this point, I'm going to open up her mic. Holly, thank you very much for calling in. How are you? It's great to hear from you.
Hi, Robert. Yeah, this is Holly out in Oklahoma. And hello to James.
Hey, Holly.
American Refugee Radio as well.
And nice to hear you. I've been listening to the show. I've been unable to chat in the chat room for some reason, so I decided to call in.
Great.
But I want to tell James, you know, I like Xbox. But you know, it's funny. I've been hanging out on the overpasses, and now my husband's the Oklahoma State coordinator for the 2 million bikers to D.C. And
beautiful.
So it's an interesting world.
Doesn't it feel good? Doesn't it feel good to get out? I mean, to do something, you know? And you know, I hope it's a fever that spreads across the country, that everybody gets out there and does something. You know, don't be complacent. Do something. It'll feel wonderful. Wonderful.
I honestly believe Overpasses already has made a profound difference. I really do.
Well, thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, and thank you for being a part of it. I can't even talk. I got a big smile on my face.
That's great to hear.
I'm just going to listen in because I wasn't able to participate in chat and everything, Robert. Thanks for letting me in on here.
Well, you're welcome. And as always, I'll keep your mic live just in case you want to chime in. But if you are going to have some, you know, a lot of noise, just mute the mic, and then that's fine. We have folks who do that as well. And, you know, I remember, with me getting started, I was, you know, at the unfortunate event where I got laid off as well, and I was, you know, unemployed for a while. And so one of the things I did to keep busy is you'll remember this, Holly, is, you know, I volunteered as the grassroots coordinator here, not officially linked up with the national campaign, but through the website, newt.org, became the grassroots phone team captain here in Ohio for Newt Gingrich's campaign during the primary. And then after Super Tuesday, when the unfortunate event that Romney won the primary, at least that's how I see it, then the person who was the Ohio State coordinator for the grassroots kind of dropped off the face of the earth. I think even went over to the Romney camp. So I kind of unofficially took up that mantle to, you know, try to get as many folks as I can here in Ohio to still to be backing the Newt Gingrich campaign. And while I was doing that, I was calling into, you know, the different blog talk radio shows, and we networked with some. And then I had
and that's
some
how
folks.
We met.
Yep, that's how you and I met, Holly, exactly.
Well,
and
like James was saying, if anything else, we've made some good friends.
Yes, we did. And just a couple of weeks ago on my two-year anniversary, I was just able to be able to physically meet one of our panelists here, and that's she's not on with us tonight, but Cindy Todd, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I've just on November 11th, around that time this year, I finally got the chance to actually meet her. My wife and I were in Florida for you know, for our anniversary, and we got a chance to meet her. It was a great experience to do that.
Congratulations on your anniversary, and I'm glad you got to meet Cindy.
Yeah, she's good people. My wife really took a liking to her as well, and you know, so that was a great opportunity. I'm glad I was able to do while I was down there. But yeah, so you know, I had some folks who, you know, I was kind of a guest speaker over on a couple of the shows, or and they're like, well, Robert, you know, what do you think about having your own show? And I'm like, well, okay, you know, it wasn't working at the time, so I too was doing the show live for five nights a week. And then I was doing it two nights a week. We're doing rebroadcasts. But I ended up getting employed again, and it take a lot of my time. And unfortunately, because of that, I had to really decrease the amount of shows to only one night a week. And now I'm trying to get back to two, maybe on Fridays. I'm hoping to do another episode of a series I'm working on called Newt News Fridays, which, you know, just goes over what Newt Gingrich is up to, kind of do some money bombs, you know, where we can to help, lessen the costs that's been, you know, that built during his campaign, because some of those still need to be paid off, because I would really like to see Newt run again in 2016, I think, you know, and I agree with what Mark Prasik said, he's a national treasure. He's got, bold ideas, and definitely we have the leadership that I believe this country needs in order to come back to the place where many of us here were discussing tonight.
Yeah, and you've done a wonderful job, and I've enjoyed watching you progress and learning and going forward, and real proud of you.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much, Holly. I appreciate that. It's great to hear folks, you know, back on. So it's really good to hear your voice, and hopefully you can, you know, come on more often and talk with us, and you know, keep the round table here as we did during the primaries, where, you know, I do keep the mic's open. And one thing, I'm proud of the audience and the people call in, because when they do, is one of the things you hear on a lot of, you know, radio shows, is, not I'm not talking about necessarily on Blog Talk Radio, but like on TV and things of that nature, people just always talking over each other, and you can barely hear what the other person's saying. And I've really, I mean, it's some in the primaries, because, you know, emotions are really high, but for the most part, people are always very respectful, and I really appreciate that, because it does, you know, get the opportunity for us to be able to keep your mics open and have the roundtable discussions that we're able to have.
Oh, yeah. And I really enjoy listening to is it American Refugee as I was listening, and I definitely want to try to tune into his radio program.
Yeah, it's American Refugee Radio on Blog Talk Radio. It's www.theamericanrefugees.com and at American Refugee on Twitter. And one thing I just kind of wanted to pile on, it's one of the things that's great about this, and I would encourage anybody to just become a full-time activist if they can, is that it is so cool to love what you're doing from the time you get up until the time you go to bed every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do. I have found my vocation.
If I could do this for a living, I would. Go ahead.
I'm doing the radio. I'm doing the website. I'm doing the Twitter. I'm going out on the streets. I'm calling in other radio shows. And basically, I'm just being the American refugee all day, every day. You know, I got to make sure I find time to take good care of the dogs and everything. I got 7 dogs, and I didn't always, but I've ended up with a bunch of rescues. And so I have – you know, the dogs have to be swapped in and out, and you have all the stuff to do with that. But it is really, really cool, and there's just no more gatekeepers out there. You know, you can get on the Internet and go do what it is that you do. You can do something important. You can do something fun. You can do something that you love.
And there's a lot of truth to that. Could Robert?
Yes.
Could I ask James a question really quickly?
Oh, so, no, certainly. Anytime.
And then I'll just sit back. And I know
No, go ahead.
Time.
You can chime in whenever you want. Ask anything you want.
I've just been busy doing other things. And James, I was just wondering the latest on Camp Bell, Wisconsin.
Oh, what we've got going on up there right now is we've just started a legal defense fund. We've got two lawsuits. I guess they've been consolidated into one against the town council of Campbell, Wisconsin, and we're going to go after them in a civil suit first, and should we win, then we're going to press the state attorney general to file criminal charges based on Title 18, Section 241, conspiracy to deny constitutional rights. And
fantastic.
That can carry a sentence of up to 30 years. And,
wow.
You know, yeah, and not to mention the civil suit that we currently have filed. You know, I hope we win it so resoundingly that we can turn their town council members into our national headquarters.
Well, and real quick, folks, I did take a gander at the time, and I do see there's only 4 minutes left of live time. But, of course, well, we can and probably will go into the extended version, which we do many times here on Bard's Logic. But if you're out there listening and you're in the chat, you want to listen in to the, and even chime in, of course, to the extended version, because after the 4 minutes are up, no one will be able to call in to listen. And that is at 347-945-7428. Again, it's 347-945-7428. And if you'd like to chime in, just push the 1 on your number dial or send me a message either through the Bard's Logic Political Talk website or on Facebook, from the Facebook page. So if you'd just like to listen in. But, of course, if you cannot make it, because I know it is getting late in some time zones, then you can listen to the remainder of the show by listening to the archives, which is available immediately after the end of the show. Actually, I think it may even be started to be available at the end of the live portion of the show. So we'd like to hear from you. So go ahead, guys. You know, I hate to interrupt, but when it gets to that point in time of the show, I need to do so. So go ahead.
In regards to Campbell, one other thing that's going on up there right now is we're actually looking at someone that's within overpasses to run against that town chairman, essentially their mayor. His election is up this year. He is up for re-election this year.
Oh, wow.
And we're actually looking at having one of our own potentially run against him. They're still looking into that. They only have until sometime in January to file for that. So I really, that's something I hope happens.
That would be beautiful.
You know, we're going to have to take this country back, and it's going to have to be one town at a time. And you know, we're focusing, of course, Overpasses focuses on the federal level because it gets headlines, you know, and it gets people's attention. But the fact is that I would always encourage everybody to run for a local office. Take this nation back from the ground up.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because that's where the fundamental change will come from, when we take it back from on a local level and change the mindset of people, well, of the American people, because we've had a slow grinding campaign against constitutional values in this country, and we have to take it back. You know, we can't simply hope to take the federal government back and keep it that way because of the mindset, you know, that this leftist socialist mindset that's infected this country. that's going to have to happen at the local level as well. And so, you know, I'm not sure who exactly they're looking at up there. You know, it may actually be also one of the lacrosse Tea Party members up there that's planning on running. And whoever it is, as long as they're constitutional,
right.
You know, I hope they win. And I don't see how they could lose considering, you know, the amount of bad press that the that town council has gotten. Shoot, I'd even say the one member of their town council that voted against that ordinance, you know, Mr. LaFond, I can't remember his first name. I think it may be David, but don't, you know, I'm not certain on that.
Right.
It, you know, it, obviously he has some idea about the Constitution. So if, you know, if it can't be one of ours, I would hope he would. At least the people in the town know who he is.
Right. And I just want to publicly thank the men and women that have been up there with the overpasses and having to deal with this and still having the courage to get out and stand up for their rights and our rights. So, thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Holly. And I do have a good friend, a very good friend here on the line that I'm excited to hear on. We haven't heard him for a while. And then we'll bring it over. We'll bring him in and we'll bring it back to you, Refugee. But I do want to say hello to our friend and fellow panelist here, Kelly Mordecai, author of The Hidden Fourth Branch, with a website of the same name. How are you, Kelly? Thank you for very much coming to the show. I missed you, man.
Hey, good, good. You made an assumption there that I'm your friend. But anyway, teasing wherever I can. Did you guys discuss the NSA and the court, Judge Leon in D.C., striking down parts of the NDAA?
We have not discussed that yet.
Oh. No, but we can.
Okay, well, I find it real interesting. You know, Gilligan's Travels. If you've heard about, there's that Gulliver's, or no, I'm talking about Gilligan's Island. Okay, James, the Department of Justice or attorney, James J. Gilligan, was asking more time, and we've got to prepare. And Judge Leon just hammered him. Said, no, you know what, we're going to, you know, we're denying you the power to spy on people, and, you know, I know you're going to do an appeal thing, but we're not going to give you any more time. No, sorry. Around here in the courthouse, we work 24/7, so we ain't giving you guys any excuse. You got endless resources. I mean, the judge hammered Gilligan and went in favor of Larry Klayman, who's an attorney, you know, the Freedom Watch, Judicial Watch guy, and so that was really cool, just seeing, this is from WorldNet Daily, just seeing how some of the inner conversations between the court and the Department of Injustice, I mean justice. did I say injustice?
Nobody flipped out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's nice being the president, you just, you know, you pick your own attorney general, and, you know, of course, he picks the guys underneath, that, and he fires a few guys that, you know, opposes your agenda, and you get all these legal battles going on, and you fight, delay. Do whatever you can, because, you know, you're the king, the god. I mean, did I say that? No, I mean the president. the Department of Justice basically got slapped.
Mm-hmm.
Same with the Patriot Act in Mayfield versus U.S. up in Portland, where Mayfield was an attorney. Somehow the fingerprint machine was mistaken, and oh my gosh, Mayfield, you attorney, you're a terrorist. So they rounded him up, and what the heck are you talking about? He had these allies, well, alibis and other things. Well, sure enough, you know, the case dismissed criminally, and then he went after the Department of Justice and whoever else for violating his rights, because he found out during the depositions and the interrogatories and subpoenas that the Justice Department, the FBI, they would kind of go to his house. It just kind of, you know, and they felt like it. They'd go through his house, and they'd go through his business at will. And so the judge, I can't remember the judge's name, but the judge hammered the Justice Department. The Justice Department was saying, well, we really need this to keep America safe. Oh, really? And the judge said, you know what, guys, Justice Department, if you're going to throw out the Fourth Amendment, you might as well throw them all out. I'm ruling in favor of Mayfield. Mm-hmm. Patriot Act and these regulations are invalid in this federal district.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, occasionally a really good judge pops up. And by the way, the judge's name is Leon in D.C. He just hammered the Justice Department. It's just so cool to read this. So that's and Clayman, he's quite a successful attorney and got quite an amazing resume. But he is basically calling for the impeachment of Obama.
Yay.
There you go, James.
Well, I'm glad that he's on the, you know, that we finally got a high-powered attorney on the bandwagon. I know we certainly can't afford one like him.
Well, I tell you what, maybe, Kelly, if you know him or you got contacts who can get a hold of him, perhaps we can have him onto the show, and him and James and the rest of us can have a conversation with him.
I mean, you know, I'll tell you what, I would take his endorsement any day of the week, without a doubt, and would be more than happy to help him gain an army of fans across the country.
Oh yeah, well he's definitely got a name for himself. He was on Alex Jones. He's probably going to be on Coast to Coast. He was the first attorney to successfully get a criminal charge against the president when he did it against Clinton, and so that was rather unique. So his resume is just stellar.
Well, I know that I have two choices for the prosecutor during the impeachment trial, and one would be Trey Gowdy, the most decorated.
Oh, he is. He's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. Most decorated prosecutor in the history of the U.S. Attorney General's office. I would just get my own shovel and dig my own hole if he ever came after me.
I would not want to be prosecuted by Trey Gowdy, no.
No, absolutely not. I mean, you know, it would be terrifying, you know. But if I couldn't get Trey Gowdy to do it.
I don't even know the guy. I'm scared now.
Yeah. just go watch some, just go YouTube up, search some Trey Gowdy Benghazi hearings, and you'll just, absolutely incredible. But if I couldn't get him, then I would want Clayman prosecuting, because it would be, you know, it'd be a strike. You know, it would be, you know, bowling a 300,
mm-hmm.
you know, with
oh,
either
wow.
one of them.
Yeah, well, Trey Gowdy did this other thing. I was watching his Furosity, one of the Benghazi people. Well, you know, I have no further things to say. And then Daryl Issa, I don't know if he's an attorney or how good he is, but, well, okay, Trey Gowdy piped. Wait, no. we have got to do cross-examination here. We have the right to do cross-examination.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he jumped on it, and
oh,
so
yeah.
That was interesting. And then there was another comment Trey Gowdy was making, was he say...
That was when Sebelius made a statement and then pleaded the fifth, I believe.
Right, but
yeah.
She opened herself up to cross-examination.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yes, you tried to make a statement and then take the fifth. You don't get to do that, okay?
Exactly.
No.
You take the fifth or you don't. It's not. You don't get to go make a statement and then say, now I take the fifth, having made the statement. Exactly.
A little late.
Trey Gowdy.
Go ahead, Rep. Jeff, you want to elaborate on some of that? I want to be able to bring you in, and then we'll get a Holly.
Well, no, it's all good stuff. Eventually, this is all going to end up before the Supreme Court, and your guess is as good as mine about what they decide, because this is an area where traditional liberal and conservative labels move to the side a little bit when it comes to this kind of this type of libertarian stuff. And there's a couple of Supreme Court justices that I think, quite frankly, are impossible to read now. Yeah, you got three liberals, you got three conservatives, then you have a compromised Justice Roberts who's been blackmailed. They've got something on Roberts. And then you've got Kennedy, who sometimes is dead on and sometimes is dead off. Sometimes he's looking at the Constitution. Sometimes he's looking at some legal opinion out of some African nation. Okay, Kennedy's completely unpredictable himself. Okay, I can't even get a read on what Kennedy's compass is. He's right on Obamacare. He's right on guns. He's wrong about other things. You know, Roberts, I thought I knew who he was until the Obamacare decision, and it has nothing in common with any of his previous writing, and I think the guy was blackmailed.
Yeah, I would have to agree.
But there are some on that decision that perhaps you thought if he was opening up and saying, hey, it's attacked, then it would open up, you know, window for attack against Obamacare. Some are speculating on that.
I don't know. It was bizarre to me. Now, I wanted to bring up to y'all, I'm eventually going to have an interesting little legal challenge here in New Orleans. And the only reason that I haven't brought it yet is because I'm small. It's just me, and it's really a major commitment for me to make, for me to decide to go ahead and get arrested and spend a few days in jail because I got the seven dogs and everything else. But NOPD has given me no end of problems when I go out and give out constitutions in the street. And here's what goes on. I accept money while I'm giving out the constitutions, okay? If people want to make a donation, they make a donation while I'm giving out the constitutions. You know, even though I buy them in bulk, they cost me about a quarter apiece. I've given out 15,000 constitutions on the street in New Orleans. That costs money. Okay, so I have to take some contributions. Now, I've talked to an attorney who made it quite clear that he says, no, if you're not selling them and you're giving them away, then you're not selling. They can't say that. Now, New Orleans wants to say that I either need a license to sell, which is incredibly expensive, or that I need a license to beg, which is also expensive in New Orleans.
Wow.
Okay.
You have to have a license to buy. That's incredible.
Yeah. According to one attorney that I spoke to, he said, here's the deal. He said, you're not carrying around a sign that says you're asking for money. He said, if all you're doing is exercising your First Amendment rights to talk about political speech and hand out constitutions, and that's exactly what I do, and then once you're engaged in conversation with people, say, by the way, I do accept donations, you're not begging. And if they give you money, that's totally – they're free to do it. You're free to accept it. Well, the New Orleans Police Department disagrees, and they've given me a really hard, hard, hard time in some of the best areas of the French Quarter and stuff like that, which causes me to go out in other places. Eventually, I'm going to test it. And I'm going to go ahead and get myself arrested. What I may also do is have somebody videotaping from a nearby balcony and just tell the police officer up front, look, this is being videotaped right now. I believe I'm engaged in constitutionally protected speech, and I'm going to continue doing what I'm doing here. If I don't have somebody videotaping it, New Orleans being what New Orleans is, I'm going to get the crap beaten out of me. Okay, and I don't particularly look forward to that. I'm willing to risk it, but eventually I'm going to test it because in New Orleans, they don't just want you to have one license. No, there's a license for Jackson Square, which is one square block of the quarter. There's a license for the rest of the quarter, which is only a square mile. There's a license for the small part of the CBD they'll let you work. There's a license for a Mardi Gras parade route. There's a license for the immediate area of Jazz Fest during Jazz Fest, and then there's a license for the city proper. And since there are crowds of people in different places at different times, I travel to different places. It would literally cost me a few thousand bucks to get all the licenses they want me to get, but I'm not doing it.
So do you have to have a license to get a license?
I just don't see the logic behind, you know, having a license to beg.
Behind that is to attempt to corral. It's to make panhandling illegal, and it's to attempt.
It's to attempt to
keep the panhandlers from bothering the tourists.
Right.
And scaring the tourists. But
I understand that. But I'm just saying that, you know, when you hear that, you know, they're asking for. I mean, you know what's behind it. I mean, it's not certainly you know to help or to regulate or anything. It's to keep them from doing it. It's just the preposterousness of, you know, of that saying, well, if you want to beg, you got to give us a license. It's like, well, you know, if I had the money to beg, I wouldn't, you know, wouldn't be begging.
Uh-huh.
You know how this happened? You need a license to beg in New Orleans? This is how it happened. A few of the homeless guys got together and said, you know what? If we spend the money on a lobbyist, we could get the city council to require a license, and then we would be the only three people that's licensed to beg. We'll make a ton of money.
You know, it's funny that you bring up those guys because early on in Overpass, people are like, well, I don't know where to go because they won't let us go on Overpass. So I'm like, do you have homeless people or people begging for money anywhere? They're like, well, yeah, all over the place. I said, go where they're at.
And they're like, why would you say that? I'm like, they've already done all the demographic research the hard way. They know where the most money comes from,
well,
and that's where the most people are. So that's where you go.
Another thing we learned with Overpass, James, was to have someone with a camera.
Absolutely.
To protect
absolutely.
Ourselves. That's a very smart thing to do.
Well, you have to.
You probably ought to have two people with a camera. One, he's right over there, and then you got the other cameraman because they're going to hunt him down and grab his...
They're going to knock him down.
And
in New Orleans, you have a problem. Look, there's a lot of good cops in New Orleans that I respect, but there's always been a lot of corruption in the New Orleans Police Department, and it's still there. And you also have a situation where New Orleans wants its money, and unfortunately, the mayor of New Orleans is a man by the name of Mitch Landrieu. He is Senator Mary Landrieu's little brother. And it's old New Orleans Democratic money, old New Orleans corruption. He happened to go to law school with my sister, and he has known me and hated me for years, ever since we got into a physical altercation during a political campaign when I was volunteering for a Senate candidate years ago. So it all plays into it. But eventually I intend on testing it. And literally – sometimes when you do this kind of thing full time, practical things become a matter. Like, I got seven dogs. The dogs got to get fed. And this has to happen and that has to happen. And I always have to just say practically, okay, well, what's going to happen if I get my butt kicked and spend 3 days in jail? Who's going to feed the dogs? Who's going to do this? Who's going to do that? And it's a lot to put together.
Well, and that's why I was, late tonight on your show, Refugee, is, scrambling in about it was not we didn't have a lot of time left before I do shared parenting. And I'm not going to go through the whole convoluted schedule me and her mother has, but I only had limited time tonight to try to get her homework done. She's like, oh, by the way, we got to do this thing, and we really they didn't even cover that in class, and I'm like, I haven't seen this stuff in years. And it was like I don't have the paper, but it basically was like, Dancer ate one third of the cookies, and then Prancer ate one third of the cookies that were left, and then Rudolph ate one third of the cookies that were left from that, and then by the time they're all done, there was 8 cookies left for Santa to eat. How many cookies were there originally?
Right.
it's like that math was never my biggest forte, to be honest.
That sounds like Common Core math there, Robert. What are you doing?
it actually is Common Core. My daughter goes to a which kind of burns my backside because she goes to a private school. Not that it's something I could practically afford, but I just make sure that it happens where she can go. Because the public school system here, although in our area it's not too bad, I just rather her not go into a public school system. So, there's certain things you sacrifice to make sure that can happen. But when I seen Common Core on some of her textbooks, I was just like, I was unhappy. I thought about homeschooling, but there really isn't anyone who would be able to do that so I could be able to keep her home. So, but yeah, that is actually, you're right, that she isn't doing Common Core.
Wait, I'm confused, Robert. You mean your daughter goes to public school or private school?
Private school. She goes to a private Catholic school.
Wow, so they still have Common Core books. Well, I heard this also elsewhere, that even private schools have to adopt Common Core. I was like, what?
Yeah, she's got them. I see some of her workbooks that says Common Core on them.
It depresses me to no end. My godson, I was very involved in my godson's education. And I will never forget his first day at Jesuit High School here in New Orleans, which is a great school that they're going to try to destroy. But it was his first day of eighth grade, and Jesuit starts in the eighth grade. It wasn't his first day. It was actually a pre-thing where you went and you picked up your books and everything like that. And I was there with him. And I noticed that his eighth grade English grammar textbook that they gave him was homemade. And I looked at it, and I asked the priest, I said, a homemade English textbook, Father? And he looked me right in the eye, and he said, there is no longer a textbook written in the United States that teaches the English language properly, so we had to write our own.
Oh, wow.
How nice, guy.
And,
I'm impressed.
And yeah, I reached out and shook his hand as soon as he said that, you know, because I knew. I said, yep, Dustin's going to do just great here. And, you know, and it's scary to think about the government coming in and dictating standards even inside of the Catholic schools.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tony pointed out today something about grammatical correctness. You know, mm-hmm. the phrase, there was a farmer, had his dog, and Bingo is his name. Oh. You know who was the dog named Bingo or the farmer? Actually, under perfect English, it was farmer's name that was Bingo.
Mm-hmm.
That's not taught.
Wow.
Yes, but under Common Core, cow is spelled C-O-W-E-I-E-I-O.
You know, and also she brought a paper home or some kind of, you know, weekly reader or something like that. It's called the Weekly Reader. It has some historical things and this and that in it. Well, one of them was about the Civil War. And I'm trying to recall the most of it, but it was about the Civil War. And, you know, of course, it was about the North and the South, and it was talking about, you know, why these states wanted to secede because they didn't want to give up slavery. Basically,
but your daughter's a racist. Your daughter's a racist.
But my consternation comes from is they were making it out that that slavery was the number one reason for the, and this is what they teach. We all know that slavery was the number one reason for the Civil War, and that's not true.
No, it
is more about state. It's more about states and federal power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it absolutely was true that the average soldier fighting for the Confederacy didn't give two hoots about slavery. He didn't own slaves, and he didn't give two hoots about it. But what he did care about was states' rights.
Right, and I've not seen that. I mean, has anyone here seen that being taught in schools? I mean, even on the grade school and high school level, where they talk about the Civil War being mostly about states' rights, I don't hear that. I mean, they put out that, you know, slavery was the main reason for the Civil War.
Abraham Lincoln wrote somewhere that to keep the Union together, if it meant giving the South the right to slaves, he would have done that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You don't hear that.
No, you don't hear that at all. Exactly.
Robert E. Lee, that's another example. Robert E. Lee, the great general from Virginia,
mm-hmm.
he was approached by the Union. Hey, you know, we'll make you the top general. And he said, no, sir, as Virginia goes, so will I go. I am devoted to my state.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they don't teach that during the Civil War, the early part of it, I mean, a number of states seceded, but not many people know that Lincoln sent the Massachusetts militia to arrest the Maryland legislature. Now, why would he do that? Because the Maryland legislature was about to secede.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys are going to be under indefinite detention until the Civil War, little squabble is over. It's like you said, you arrested a whole state legislature, and nobody notes that about Lincoln?
Lincoln was a complex man. There was a lot right with him. There was a lot wrong with him. And he was a complex man, a complex figure. And he's not real understood. One of the things that he foresaw, actually, is that he foresaw problems that were going to happen down the road, and he foresaw that the black people were going to become a permanent underclass. He foresaw that they would eventually fight for equal rights and get them, but he realized the situation as it existed, because after all, you got to realize, what did we do? Who were the slaves? Well, this is going to make me sound horribly racist, but in an evolutionary sense, they were the losers. Most of the slaves were purchased. They were already slaves in Africa. They were the losing sides of they were prisoners of war, and so on and
right.
so forth. We bring them over here. Okay, then after they're over here, they're not allowed to become educated, so on and so forth. They're held down. They're held back. They didn't have any money. They weren't educated. He foresaw the problems. And, you know, you'll hear blacks talk a lot about the whole 40 acres and a mule idea. Lincoln's real idea was that every single Negro, freed Negro slave would either be literate and a landowner, or they would be deported, okay, and sent back to Africa. He intended on deporting most of the slaves, freed slaves, but those that remained would all be literate landowners.
Wow.
You know, and had that happened, you'd have a smaller black population, but it would be a well-educated black population, and the country would just be entirely, entirely different.
We move up to the 20th century when abortion on demand became legal, and you know, the fact that the vast majority of abortion clinics are in primarily black neighborhoods. And when you do the tally, you know, of abortions that have happened, and you're talking 54 million, the majority of which were from the black community. Now, imagine the impact that the black community would have had on modern American society had basically the largest genocide they've minimized, you know, unfortunately, because of the teachings of the left, you know, their role in America, in modern America, has been drastically minimized because, well, I mean, 54 million, the majority of which are minorities, and it's almost unfathomable just to imagine that.
Well, of course, Margaret Sanger, who founded Planned Parenthood, a eugenicist, a racist, and somebody who basically believed in wiping out the Negro population, absolutely did. People don't realize that. Look, one thing before I have to go, and we might even run out of borrowed time in a minute, that I'd love to invite people to, if they're interested and if they're pro-life. On Monday from 7 until 11, and you don't have to come for the whole marathon session. You can pop in and pop out, but it's going to be over at patriotjournalist.com, over at Mark Prasek's website, in what's called his Red Meat Chat Room. And if you go to patriotjournalist.com and you click on Red Meat, you go there. We're having a pro-life event, and it's going to be video chat and the chat room, and we are going to be attempting to trend the hashtag on Monday the 23rd, pray to end abortion. We're going to be praying together. We're going to be networking with each other. We're going to be doing Christmas videos and pro-life videos and everything else. And if you want to come over and be a part of it during that time, just come on over.
What day will it be again?
It's Monday the 23rd from 7 in the evening until 11 in the evening Eastern time. And
I want to throw this out. I know there's a lot of people working. There was five doctors that told my mother to abort me, so obviously I'm pro-life on a state level. The best victory that can happen for the pro-life cause is for the pro-lifers to learn that it is a states' rights issue. If we have... You know, we look at homosexual marriages, you know, they've been outlawed in, 36 states. If we can get people to realize, oh, this is a states' rights issue, let the states decide whatever they want to do, Connecticut, 1800s, outlawed it. A number of states outlawed abortion. Anyway, we'd rather have 36 states with a victory. We'll take 25 right now, I mean, even 20. 20 states with a victory with pro-life because it's been turned into a states' rights issue. Fighting Roe versus Wade and get minimal traction. That's where I'm going. Is this a states' rights issue? If we can get people in power to stop, and that's what they sucker the people in. They sucker conservatives in, who well then you know the people who get elected are stinking. They'll vote for the NDAA and the Patriot Act and everything else stupid. What I'm saying is we got to stop giving the power to the federal government through these social issues. States' rights issues, and ironically, we will get more traction, more mileage, more positive results when we get things in the hands of the states, and we let the states say individually, you know what, we're done with abortion, okay?
It is largely a states' rights issue, but it's also a human rights issue. Now, you can look at it different ways constitutionally. You can say that the right to life applies to everybody, but it's certainly absolutely true that we didn't issue death certificates for miscarriages and so on and so forth, and it's debatable. Certainly, states should definitely have the right to ban abortion. I'm going to tell you something else where you're kind of right, too, about just how many lives it will save. Anything that you can do that actually puts anything in the way of an abortion saves lives. 24-hour waiting period saved tons of lives because so many women change their mind, okay, from the moment that they decide to get the abortion until they don't. Planned Parenthood is a big part of that. There's a number of women that walk into Planned Parenthood not knowing that they're going to get an abortion that day, okay, and they get talked into it, they get scheduled, it happens very, very quickly and everything else, and anything that you can do to inform women and to slow women down that are in a difficult situation, the more lives you can save.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, let me tell you a story. There was this, they weren't married, but they got pregnant. And my buddy, well, I had a good buddy, he was the uncle of the father. And then the other girl, he got pregnant and stuff. They weren't married. Well, we interviewed that morning. It was like 7:30. They were going to leave about 8:15 to go to and it took them about an hour and a half drive to get to the clinic. And we talked with them, and we just said, you know what, five doctors told my mother to abort me, and she chose not to because she didn't want that on her conscience. We will lose this baby no matter what. There was an infection. You know, he could be born deaf or blind or dumb or handicapped or missing an arm. But, you know, of course, I'm normal, or at least I think I'm normal. And but we told her that story, and they invited us in. We had a cup of coffee, and they drove the hour and a half, and then my friend, his nephew, they got to the door, and he's freaked out. So I can't do this. I cannot do this.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the baby, and I saw the baby like 3 or 4 years later. Like, hi, how you doing? Da, 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 you know, and, hi, this is my daughter. Her name is Faith.
Beautiful.
And yeah, and she was really happy that she kept a little girl. And, you know, that waiting period is exactly, we intervened. I had a bunch of stupid young kids advising them. They're like, come on. But, you know, we were older and we got involved. And that hesitation, that little, hey, look, we care. It's human life. An hour and a half later, you know, he freaked out, I can't do this. And she chose to keep it. But that waiting in her story, in her situation, we have another beautiful human being with us on this planet.
Yeah, if you guys haven't seen it, look at any of the videos of Gianna Jessen on YouTube. Gianna Jessen is a wonderful woman who survived an abortion. And she's got cerebral palsy because she survived the abortion.
I have her book.
Yeah, it was a last trimester saline solution abortion. And her story is absolutely wonderful, absolutely beautiful. She does a great job with it.
Yeah, I think I believe I have that book somewhere. I'm actually looking at my books now. See, Jessica Shaver? No, I have the Jessica Shaver.
Okay, you have a different one. Yep.
Yeah, there's another one where, it's called Gianna. Is that her name?
Gianna. Gianna Jessen, yeah.
Okay, that must be the person's name. I guess Jessica Shaver's the author
about
her story. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, book, it says Focus on the Family. It says Gianna on it. It said Abort It and Live to Tell About It.
Mm-hmm.
It says Gianna is an incredible true story of one girl's remarkable and courageous journey from abortion survivor to steadfast defender of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's a great lady, and I really like her. Listen, guys, I enjoyed meeting James so much. I'm a big fan of Overpasses. I'm going to check out overpasses.org. And, Holly, it was great hearing from you. It was great talking to everybody tonight. I have got to run. I have dogs that are upset with me.
Uh-oh.
And there's seven of them, so you don't want to upset all those dogs. But thank you very much. And once again, get that the name of your show, American Refugees.
It's American
Radio.
Refugee. Yeah, it's American Refugee Radio and Blog Talk Radio, and we are the American Refugees plural.com. If you go to the website.
Well, good night, sir. Good night, sir. I've never met before.
All righty. Great talking to everybody. Bye bye.
You too.
Good
take
night.
Care. Goodbye.
Okay.
So, who was that guy?
That guy was, he calls himself the Refugee from American Refugee Radio. He's another Blog Talk radio show host. He's also, like Bard's Logic, a member of the Patriot Journalist Network.
Oh, cool.
Yes, he's another host here. I was on his show briefly tonight for about 15 minutes, and what we're looking to do is take all the radio hosts, Blog Talk radio hosts that are members of the Patriot Journalist Network, and I'm working on, networking with them, kind of, cross-show promotions, things such as like we did, Holly, back during the primaries, if you recall, I'm sure you do, how we used to deal with the number of shows back then.
Right, exactly.
So we're working on, trying to get some of them together. There's been some success, at least in this instance, and then some I haven't heard back from, and I don't know, and I'll be frank, I don't know if it's an ego thing or whatever, but regardless, we need to work together, in the grassroots, because we definitely need to have, en masse activism.
Right. And that's one reason I wanted to introduce you to James and different ones that I've came across that I think are doing a whole lot of good, let's face it, we're all seeing that it's not the America we grew up in, and we're all trying to save it. So let's get together and do it.
Well, we absolutely have to. The thing is we've taken so many steps away from what made America what it is, that people say, you can't ever go home, you can't ever go home, or you can't go back, because things are always moving forward. And I hate to use that word, just because, of
right.
Obama. But the fact is we've gotten so far away from what made America what it is, that if we were, returning to it would be moving forward for a new century. And you're talking generations, at least two generations that are alive right now that never really experienced the wonder of America as it was intended to be, and I would dare say more than that, but at least two generations that grew up in a nation, running in deficits and going into wars that we really had no business being in, that were, our government being bribed by corporate interests, and instead of being there to do the job that they're supposed to do. And if we were to return to, the government that our founding fathers intended to us, that it would be a step forward for, the generations that are alive today. And you can't ever go relive the past, but it would be such a radical change from what people have become accustomed to that it would once again be a step forward into liberty.
Well, I have hope because I just turned a young 48 on Friday the 13th, I've never seen or experienced so much division, but I know there has been a lot of division in our country before I was born or around the time I was born. And so there's hope, we can reunite, and that's what needs to be done. There is always that hope.
Well, that's pretty well said.
You're right. You figure about the time, I'm 46, coming up on 47 in July. About the time we were born, the civil rights movement was in full swing, and it should have happened sooner, but that in and of itself was a source of great division in this country for people that wanted to cling to the old racist past and those that wanted to move forward to liberty, and that's really what it was. It was taking an entire segment of our population that
we cannot deny they were abused. And I mean, you know, lynchings and you know, the worst things you can imagine. And, you know, there was great division in America among, well, wrong-hearted people then that, you know, thought that for whatever reason that, you know, that particular portion of the population was inferior based on bad science and stupid beliefs.
Right.
But we've got a different type of division today, and I'm not quite sure how to put it, but I think it's almost as if the people alive today are trying to refine what it is that will make America great. Because, you know, look at our country. We're so deep in debt. I mean, you know, our children are born today owing $55,000, and they haven't gotten anything out of it. How we're going to get rid of that, you know, to be honest, I don't know. You know, I mean, my instinct says pull the plug and get over the depression. You know, default on it. You know, let the economic system reset itself, and while we're at it, shut the Fed down. You know, it would be rough. But if there is any nation in the world that is capable of recovering from a worldwide depression like that, and that's what it would be. It wouldn't simply be the United States, because as bad a shape as we're in, you know, the manufacturing nations of the world, which are, you know, like China and second world countries, not first world countries, you know, second world countries. A lot of people never, you know, they hear about the first world, and that's, you know, that's us and the Western nations and Russia. And you hear about the third world nations, you know, like Nigeria, where they've got lakes of oil waste and the water has, you know, 1,000 times the amount of benzene that's safe to drink. But they have no choice because that's the only water they have. But you never hear about those second world nations. You know, and they're the ones that are manufacturing everything for us right now. And, you know, the entire world would plunge into a Great Depression. I actually have done a lot of research into the effects of the United States defaulting. But if we were going to do something like that, you know, it would have to be followed up with a reset of the powers that be that are pulling the strings that led us to this situation, you know, much like what they did in Greenland, where they just quite simply went in and arrested a large part of the government and told the international banks to get out. And yeah, I'm quite certain their economy took a hit from that. I didn't do a lot of research into how that happened for Iceland. But the fact is, well, Iceland is still a nation. They're not burning all of the houses down. There aren't people starving in the streets. So, you know, they're actually an example that it can, if the people choose to do so and to ride out the storm and to work past it, it can be done if the will of the people is strong enough. And we're going to have to find that as a nation, you know, to find the will to get past the rough period that it's going to take to fix what's wrong in this country. And you know, printing out money at $85 billion a month just to hold it together.
Yeah, because at this point, we need restoration.
Well,
we need a lot more than that. Well, Robert, if I can, I actually have the ability to go backwards. Here we go. All right. Anyway, that's a joke.
That's pretty neat.
And you, now we have our back. We have backmashing on your show now, Robert.
Who here did that in high school?
You play it forward and vote for the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. All right. Anyway, you know what's amazing is if we gently inform people. It was the Republicans, the first Republican president, Lincoln. He freed the slaves. Okay, 14th Amendment. You had the Republicans fighting for civil rights. You had, you know, on the sidelines, or, you know, in the white sheets and the pillowcases. I mean, goofy guys wearing pillowcases on their head. They're called the KKK. Democrats, that's who they were, and they were killing people. Democrats. Who opposed the Civil Rights Act of 1965? The Democrats. What happened when LBJ took over? This is the transition. LBJ says, you know what, the black vote is a huge population. I don't care about the blacks, that's what LBJ said. I just want their vote. And now we have this perverted thing of history. Oh, Republicans are racist. No, we freed your black ass. Let's knock it off. You know, my great-grandfather fought in Iowa Union to free, you know, supposedly to free the slaves. I was like, look, do I owe you an apology? I'm sorry. He went home with a 50-caliber bullet in his hip, and he continued, you know, farming. I don't know how he did it, but, you know, I'm tired of prejudice against me. I am tired of it. Prejudice means what? A preconceived notion, a bias without looking at the facts. Illogical, says the dictionary. It's like the second I say something opposing your political viewpoint, you call me racist. Are you serious? That's prejudice. And I'm tired of it. It's called reverse discrimination. But how do we gently communicate, hey, look, you know, da-da-da-da-da, I'm not your enemy. If you bleed red, you have my affection. You know, I'm tired of the Democratic mantra.
Well, and the fact that they come back, you know, before I don't even bother with debating with the libtard crowd anymore. But you know, over the last couple of years before overpasses came along and you know, basically took up all that in useless debate time. They would actually try to twist that around and say, well, the Democrats then would be Republicans now. It's like, really? You know, I mean, that's the best you have. But they're not, you know. I mean, especially when you bring up LBJ. You know, the Great Society, a socialist government, basically, is what he was aiming us towards then, you know, by giving out welfare. And the fact is that a handout is not a hand up. It makes you dependent.
And
that's not to say that there aren't people out there that don't need a hand, you know, don't need help, because there are.
We still have hunger
in America. I mean, you know, really, if you were to turn the food stamp program over to me, here's how it would work. You would get a voucher, and you would take it to a food bank, probably run in a church. You would turn in your food voucher with your paperwork that said listed any medical conditions that may exist within your family, because that does happen, peanut allergies and so on like that. And they would go back, and they would bring you bags of food that you actually have to prepare. No junk food, no Coca-Cola, no Doritos, no nothing.
What they can get with that stuff anymore. It's amazing.
Oh, I know. I mean, you know, you see signs where it says liquor store, now accepting food stamps. Seriously?
Yeah,
it's preposterous is what it is, what it's turned into. And if these people say, well, I don't know how to cook, well, isn't that handy? We just happen to have a cookbook that will cover all of the ingredients that we just gave you. And I don't know if it's the perfect plan, but it would be an improvement on what we have now.
Right. It just amazes me some of the things that the folks can get, you know. I mean, I was, you know, my wife works for a grocery store, and, you know, she just sees, you know, that kind of stuff all the time. She'll come and she's like, man, Rob, she's like, sometimes these guys eat better than we do. It's just amazing.
Well, you should never be able to buy steak and lobster on government assistance, period.
Oh, I agree. I mean, and they do. She's like, oh, they've got all the big pieces of fresh fish and, you know the high-end ice creams and this and that. It's like, man, how do they do that? You know?
I would have a blacklist of things you couldn't buy, and as much as
I agree, I would too.
Yeah, I love some ice cream. You know, I don't eat it often because I keep it with me. you know, but frivolous foods like that should not even be allowed. You know,
I agree. Only nourishing stuff. I agree.
And, you know, and that would, well, and if, you know, I don't know, it would do so much better for this country if we were to do that. I mean, just the simple responsibility of having to cook a meal, it's a start. It's a small step,
right.
But it's a start. And really that's the key that I think is the problem in this country right now is people feel like they should not have to be responsible for themselves, and this is where this whole socialist agenda is coming from, is because they're being taught that there is no personal achievement. Some school districts, I believe they're out in California, actually no longer have playoffs because they don't want anybody to lose.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. But real quick, folks, I hate to say it, but we've got about 10 minutes left of. Probably less than that, maybe about 9 minutes of the of even the extended version. It's been a great conversation throughout the show. It's great having Gordon Taylor on from the Patriot Bunkers website, and also great to have, of course, you guys on, James and Kelly and Holly, and, of course, it was great to have American Refugee Radio on as well, as well as others who called in tonight and participated in the chat. But unfortunately, the chime runs. Now, this will probably be the last regular show for Bard's Logic for the 2013 year, because next Wednesday, as we know, is Christmas. And so I'd like to wish everyone a Merry Christmas on that. And then, of course, the Wednesday after that is New Year's Eve. And so I'm sure there'll be folks out there bringing in the new year. So probably will be the first Wednesday in January that we'll have the regular show. But I am working on and hopefully be able to get things together for another episode either this Friday or next. So take a look out for it of the Newt News Fridays. I did have a lot of things from Crossfire that I had saved up. I was going to get some audio clips from my old TV, but then we switched providers to try to save some money. So, unfortunately, all the things I had saved up are gone off the box, so I can't reference those Crossfires with Newt on them. But we'll have some other things. Hopefully I'll be able to put all that together for this Friday or next. I'll keep folks posted on that. But we'll give just a couple minutes, and when I mean a couple, maybe one or two for each of you to just have any closing thoughts, and then I'll proceed to close out the show. And, of course, as I do, I give deference to the ladies first. We'll go with Holly, and then you, James, and then you, Kelly, and then I'll close things out. Go ahead, Holly.
Okay, well, it was great to be able to get on and talk to everybody tonight, and Merry Christmas to you also, Robert.
Thank you.
And just one quick thing as to what James was saying about a handout and a hand up, simply said, bigger government equals less freedom. And so, anyway, nice to speak to everybody tonight, and thanks for having me, Robert.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you very much for coming on. Take care, and, of course, you're always welcome. So, bringing it over to you, James.
Well, I'd just like to throw out two ideas and then one last thing. I forgot one of the ideas, but oh well, that's okay.
We'll have other shows.
Yes, we will. It'll come back just as randomly as it showed up. In regards to Newt Gingrich, I was just thinking, and it's popped into my head several times during the show, if he were to choose to not run again in 2016, I would like to see him take on the conservative role of Karl Rove and help groom a conservative candidate to be the advisor to a conservative candidate. If he chooses not to run, he can still be very, very valuable in the 2016 election. And so if he chooses not to run, hey, choose the guy. Choose somebody that he would endorse and mentor. In his stead. And that would be an interesting thing to see.
candidate would be.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I would guess he would know better than we do.
So maybe one day it'd be great if we'd be able to get Newt on for one of those Newt Fridays. I think that'd be phenomenal. I got the opportunity to briefly meet him once at a rally for him here in the city, and I didn't get a lot of time to talk with him. But so it'd be great to be able to have him on.
Yeah, it would be daunting to meet him because there's, you know, his intellect is very well renowned. I'd probably have a hard time keeping up with him if I ever did. But and the last thing I'd like to say is, you know, just drop by overpasses.org, check it out. If you're on Facebook, look us up there on Overpasses for Obama's Impeachment. If you feel like your head's about to pop off because you're sick of what's going on, join us. We'll help you get some stress out.
Yeah, again, find out when the next and we'll bring that up when the next event's going to be.
I just remembered the other idea. Since you're not going to be here in person on Christmas Day, and I wouldn't expect you to be so, why don't you pre-record some 3 hours worth of Christmas music and play that?
That's actually a good idea. I may do that. Actually, I thought about doing that in the past, and seeing if I could get a couple hours with the Christmas music on. Yeah, that might be interesting.
Yeah, you know, I mean, people that tune in regularly will tune in and go, "Wow, well, that's nice." You know?
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool. Yeah, Bard's Lodge of Christmas.
There you go. All right. Well, I'm good for now. Yeah, we'll talk again next time.
All right, well, thank you very much, James. As always, it's great to hear from you always, and I'm glad to hear you're feeling better, too. So we'll go over to you, Kelly, and then I'll close things off.
Well, I just have had a huge change in thinking. I think I want to become a liberal. I mean, I can avoid all sorts of personal responsibility. I can have a creative reality in how I think the world should be. And, you know, instead of self-control, it's other control. Yes, I can control other people and go to the feds and make the world a wonderful socialist place. And, you know, I just would have to have my denial function in full mode, because in denial, I am allowed to be codependent. Codependent where my success in life is by changing others. Yes, that's, I think I've had a change to become a uber left socialist liberal. Yep.
Well, hopefully we can change your mind by the next time we talk with you, Kelly, and hopefully it's soon, because it was great to hear from you, because, you know, we haven't heard from you for a while, and so I'd like to get a chance to talk with you. But anyway, it's about that time, so we will see folks in 2013, at least for the regular 2014, I should say, at least for the regular show. But hopefully we'll be able to get one, maybe even two, of the New Fridays in from there. But I do want to wish all of you a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year if I don't get the opportunity to talk with you there. So I will end tonight, as I do every night, and that is with the song by Aubrey Ashburn. And you can hear more of her music at www.aubreyashburn.com. See you all, folks, again. Take care, and good night.
Good night.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.